It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Ian Thompson's here from The Register. Brianna Wu from Rebellion Pack. Florence Ion from Gizmodo. We'll talk about the latest Supreme Court decision and what that means for big tech and privacy. Florence Ion says the Nothing phone lives up to its name. We'll find out what she means by that. And Google coming back to Spain. What a thought. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 881, recorded Sunday, June 26th, 2022. A cowboy hat for your dog. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. Let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or be entertained. New members can try it free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. And by Wealthfront. To start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed free for life, go to wealthfront.com/twit. And by ExpressVPN. Make sure your online activity and data is protected with the best VPN money can buy. Visit expressvpn.com/twit right now and get 3 extra months free through our special link. And by userway.org. Userway is the world's number one accessibility solution, and it's committed to enabling the fundamental human right of digital accessibility for everyone. When you're ready to make your site compliant, deciding which solution to use is an easy choice to make. Go to userway.org/twit for 30% off Userway's AI-powered accessibility solution. It's time for Twit, This Week in Tech, the show we cover the latest tech news with people I really like. That's really the only criterion for being on Twit, I think. We used to have this, you know, oh, they got to be tech journalists. Well, in this case, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. They're all good friends. That's the most important thing. In fact, it's wonderful to have Florence Ion on, a longtime host on All About Android. She's now at Gizmodo and is in the, it looks like, in the nursery, which is good because if you're needed.
No, this is the Flow Lab.
Oh.
The Flow Lab.
Already, I put my foot in my mouth and the show has just begun. Hello, welcome to the Flow Lab.
This is my candy room.
It is. It's a candy room. That's, you know,
it's Sailor Moon. It's Sailor Moon.
It's Sailor Moon.
That's critical stuff. An original 1990s poster. I have my Microsoft bag over here.
I see that.
From
a
show that I went to.
Awesome.
Over here, I have my desk mats.
Very nice.
This is where I take a nap sometimes on my Pikachu pillow.
She's in the Flow Lab.
I have rare Sailor Moon art books from the 90s, like the originals that came out. Is how I learned to draw. So you come to Boston, you can party. I'll show you all my
rare
stuff.
That's Brianna Wu, of course, as if you didn't know, executive director of Rebellion Pack, former candidate for Congress, and a good friend, of course. Thank you for joining us, Brianna. Somebody stepped on her Ethernet cable and...
I know. I delayed the whole show. Sorry, y'all.
No, not at all. Also with us, the U.S. editor of TheRegister.com, good friend Ian Thompson. Wow, this is like old home week for all three of you. I'm really thrilled to have all three of you on. On a week that has been a little bit tough, a little bit difficult for those of us in blue states, you know. And, of course, we're not... You know, we don't want to be particularly political on this show, but it does. It's very much part of the tech industry in a number of interesting ways. A number of tech companies, including Apple and Google, have told their employees if you want to relocate, you can. And B, we will pay for your trip to a state where you can get an abortion, states where the abortions are legal. I think a lot of the tech community is saying that. Is that illegal, Brianna? Is it okay to say that? It seems like that might be, you know, committing a crime.
I certainly think it's, excuse me, it's opening them up to liability, certainly, you know, because many of these states have laws, in fact, saying if you help someone with an abortion, you're also liable. Right. Yeah. So I think the difference
Texas
is
chiefly. Yeah.
Yep. Correct. So I think the difference is many of these large companies have more resources to fight this in court than, say, maybe the average person in Texas living under the poverty line might have. I do just have to say, while I appreciate this gesture for it, it can't help but feel a little bit empty to me. I cannot imagine a woman in the tech industry wanting to go to her male boss and talking about like her abortion and like asking for reimbursement for a trip out of town and time off. Like it's appreciated, but it's entirely insufficient, especially when you consider many of these tech companies, their PACs literally donate to the politicians that now are talking about a federal ban on
abortion. Kind of the least you could do in that category. Meta's done even almost a little bit less.
Well, they've banned this, haven't they? They've banned discussion about the issue.
Yeah. So first they said, we intend to offer, and by the way, listen carefully, the verbiage, travel expense reimbursements to the extent permitted by law for employees who will need them to access out-of-state health care and reproductive services. We're in the process of assessing how best to do that given the legal complexities involved. So that's really only a half promise. And yes, you're right. They have banned any discussion of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, which came down this week, from their internal discussion. Although I kind of understand it's such a heated topic. They're afraid of, I don't know, Ian, fights breaking out on their Slack? I don't know.
Well, you see, I mean, I don't know. We talked about this in the office because I don't often comment on Twitter on American politics because I'm a guest here and I feel it's kind of rude.
Although soon to be a citizen.
This
right?
just, well, maybe. maybe soon to be going back to the UK.
Maybe change your mind. Yeah.
Honestly, that a lot of people who do have exit routes are taking them at the moment. We're
really?
Seeing,
wow.
I'm already seeing people moving out, or at least getting into the first stages of moving out. Look, I don't feel it's my position to comment, but I talked to my editor and said, look, I'm going to be talking about this. Is that a problem? And he's like, no, we're not the Washington Post. Go for it. You know, but it is shameful how some media outlets have said to journalists, you can't talk about this online. Except in the context of your paper. Otherwise, you'll be seen as biased. When the hell did personal opinion become not allowed? So, yeah, I applaud tech companies for doing this. There are some, as has been pointed out, some massive holes in their strategy, particularly as they're funding the very political candidates that are pushing this forward. But, you know, there is more that can be done by the tech industry, and it's about time it stepped up to the plate and did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also very exclusive and privileged to be able to, if you have this job, to work at a tech company that will offer you this sort of thing. A lot of people don't have an exit strategy at all. A lot of people have to stay where they are and buckle in. I used to have sort of like this mindset of, well, if things just get bad, I guess I'll just leave. But then I really rooted myself.
It's super privileged. It's super privileged, right? And the people, frankly, the people who will, the women who will have the hardest time with this are people who can't relocate, right?
Yeah.
It's a privileged
mom who's already working her butt off.
Those are the people that this is going to harm most of all. We can say from a point of privilege, well, I'm just leaving, but that's not an option for.
Well, I mean, it's not even that. I mean, we did a piece on looking at sort of pregnancy and menstrual tracking apps, and somebody was just said, it's like, well, look, what you need to do is get a burner phone and just use these apps on here. And if you're going out of state, use that.
Uh-huh.
It's like, really? You're living paycheck to paycheck. You're having to go 500-600 miles for an abortion, and now you've got to get a burner phone as well. It's just not going to happen.
You shouldn't need OPSEC to get reproductive health care. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Google has told its employees you can relocate without justification. following the decision. You can move.
Yeah, they'll still sell the data to identify these women to other people, however. You know, it's like, yeah, we'll look after our own, but everyone else, yeah, we've got a business to run. Thanks very much.
Well, that's the second tech angle on this, and actually a very, very big tech angle on this is the issue of privacy. And, you know, I've said this last few shows. I've been kind of blasé about privacy. Look, if they want to do targeted ads, I understand the ad business wants targeting. I'm not crazy about it, but I don't see much of the harm. But when you are living in a state where the government is actively searching your social media posts or your search posts, trying to find out if you're doing something they don't like, that's problematic. And that's exactly, it seems, what's going to happen in many states.
Yeah. I mean, the difference between now and the last time abortion was illegal is today we live in a surveillance state, right? Where all this information is very quantifiable and prosecutors can far more easily build a case against you. You know, it's fairly infuriating.
Yeah. And it's worth mentioning also that not every, this is something I actually learned yesterday because I was trying to be helpful because I had friends who were like, well, what are we supposed to do now? You know, we live in California. We have like this privilege. We should do something. And I was like, oh, we should probably get people to move to encrypted messaging. And then I had a friend of mine who is an engineer and he reached out to me and he's like, by the way, look up what happened to Signal late last year and how their data got used by law enforcement to sort of implicate people.
Because how did even that if happen?
Sharing,
Signal says, well, we don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, it's because people had set their phones up badly.
Oh, yeah. So if you're backing up messages to iCloud, they're no longer encrypted. Well,
but also, I mean, Signal by default will keep your messages as long as you have them. And the case that you mentioned. Was just like people had just kept these messages on their phones. And phones.
So it's unencrypted.
As do I, unfortunately, as well.
So, Flo, is the issue that it's unencrypted on the phone? I mean, if I have co-opted your phone, everything's in the clear. It's in transit that it's safe. But on your phone.
Signal still had to give up the timestamps.
They did.
I forgot exactly what had happened, but
they don't know meta. They don't know metadata. They don't, or do they? Do they know who you sent messages to? I guess they do.
So PC Mag was where I read this yesterday because I just was like Googling it real quick and I had completely forgot. They had talked about, this is what law enforcement asks from us when they, you know, give us a search warrant. And they were saying one of the things is like timestamps could be used to implicate you and just, you know, it's like a freaking serial case.
It's one more bit of information that law enforcement can use and then try
that a lawyer could use to, you know, come after you.
I do just want to say here, and look, the techno angle, like this is a tech show, obviously it's important to hit. I literally used to live right next to the abortion clinic that this Mississippi case is based on, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up in Silicon Valley or Massachusetts. I grew up in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And I say this with respect because I know engineers and tech people, we see this problem and we're like, how can we address this? We naturally want to use the skills that we have and the things that we're thinking about. But I have to share with you, like, think about the people in Mississippi that this court case is about, right? They live in the Delta, which has the poorest literacy in the entire United States. Many of them are never going to leave the town that they were born in. I mean, access to electricity is an issue in the Delta, let alone school. And then you're talking about like your encrypted message app. It just, it feels so respectfully tone deaf, in my opinion. I mean, what we need is you know, this is going to be solved through an electoral process. And frankly, it's going to be solved through politicians that are more willing to use their power than, unfortunately, the people that we have right now. There are executive orders that we can do. There are things at a state level we can do. You know, there are things that we can do with having abortion clinics built on federal lands. Like, there are any number of actions we can be taking. Encrypted, like, signal apps are not the solution here. In fact, I would argue it gives you the appearance of having power while not really being addressing the central problem. Good respectfully.
Point. That's a good point, Brianna.
Yeah, that's a good
thank
point.
Thank you for that. And you're right, Brianna. It really is like, it was an emotional reaction because I'm living in a state where it didn't just turn immediately. So I was trying to look for something tangible that I could contribute. But at the core of it, it's not really addressing the people who are really, you know, going to need this help.
So given that, and I accept that, I do still think this is an opportunity for us to look at privacy and how much big tech knows about us. And now say, as you know, contrary to what my position has been for years, this is actually a big issue. Has our privacy disappeared? And what's criminalized next? And is government willing to weaponize big tech? And I think they are. And what is big tech going to do about it?
Well, I think individuals are going to start weaponizing big tech. As we've seen in the Texas and Mississippi laws, I believe, they're now offering a $10,000 bounty on someone who can, if you can sue someone who has helped in an abortion. And location data firms are happy to sell you the information that a particular person has been to a particular area. I think there is going to be a very nasty trend in these kind of things. And, okay, Scott McNeely said a long time ago, privacy is dead. When the Edward Snowden revelations came out, he tweeted out, "I didn't realize quite how right I was." Now we're about to see the real world applications of that. It's not going to be pretty.
We're also sitting in a situation, it happened in the UK, it's happened in Australia, where the government is really weighing whether encryption should be even allowed, whether privacy should be even allowed.
Oof.
And this is becoming a scary issue here.
I mean, think about it in a wider sense. You know, Clarence Thomas in his dissent very clearly indicated that, you know, gay marriage is up for debate. You know, there are a lot of these civil rights going beyond reproductive access that are very much in the air. Can you imagine, like, a future in this country where people that, like, everyone that's queer now came out online, right? Or there's an electronic trail. It's just, I mean, you know, for my generation, I went to the library to read books on it. That's just completely different today. It's so quantified that, you know, if there is this indication that, you know, the federal protection, which is based on the same law, which is based on Roe, that allows, you know, private sex acts between individuals, that's out of, you know, it's a sexual privacy issue. There are cases that can be brought now with that, right? Or gay marriage, or forcibly outing people, transgender people are increasingly in the sights of the religious right. So I think that this talk about privacy is going to become increasingly important as these tools are weaponized against these individuals if the Supreme Court stays on this course.
You remember last year, a Catholic priest was outed because a publication, a Catholic Substack publication, got his movements from Grindr.
Yeah.
Grindr historically had terrible privacy protections. It's widely used by gay men to hook up. What kind of chill does this send over the use of technology in general? I would submit technology's got to pay attention to this because there's a real worry that people will stop using it, or they will start fuzzing their information, or, you know, this is going to work rebound badly on big tech that doesn't take privacy seriously, isn't it? Or do they not care?
I honestly think they don't care. They think at this point you're so bought into the system, there is no way for you to get out of it. We'll do some nice PR moves. You know, we'll make it seem like we care, but we're still going to sell that data. We're still going to invade your privacy because you are the product. And that's the way it's going now. I think it's there seems to have been a shift in the last 5 years, maybe. I particularly noticed this with Google, where they've moved from innovation to just pure rent seeking. And it's now just like, yeah, you bought into the ecosystem. We've got 10 years of your data. Now we're going to take our money. Thank you.
You have an article in the Register, Jessica Lyons Hardcastle. She's
great.
She did she requested Amazon, Microsoft, Google, Meta, and Twitter and said on Friday morning, what will your company do to ensure the data you collect isn't going to be used to build a case against women seeking abortions and people or organizations providing abortion support? A whole day went by. None of them responded.
Not a sausage. Absolutely nothing. And it was shameful.
They haven't figured it out yet. That's why their PR is still writing up the press release.
And I can guarantee you the PR will come up with a press release that mealy-mouths it to the degree that it gives them
it's
quite
not
a bit of
like they didn't have anyway. Notice on this, though. Yeah. You know, this thing was leaked.
We've been
beforehand.
Talking about it for weeks.
We knew it was coming. Yeah. So they should have had their ducks in a row and been...
Like writing an obituary.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, you're right on that one. No,
we told people a month ago after the leak of the Alioto decision, stop using any period tracker apps that you're using because that will announce to the world in law enforcement that you're pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, although having said, we talked to a lot of the period tracker people and they're kind of absolutely, we will not share this data with anyone.
Yeah, because that's the end of their business.
The bigger risk is that this data is being sold by everyone else. And also, I mean, there was a marvelous idea that maybe men should download these period apps and start really screwing with their data sets. Which is kind of cute, but I don't think it's going to help that much.
If someone's pursuing a case against you, they're going to go get they're going to subpoena that app directly. A corrupted data set is not going to help that in any way. I also just do want to add to this conversation, and this is uncomfortable. And I say this respectfully, but this is an important show today. I have been raising the alarm on structural sexism in the technology industry for a long time.
Gamergate, of course, was a huge issue for you.
100%. So if you're talking about the same men that literally can't treat women fairly at work, like asking them to come to the rescue on like period apps. I mean, I'm sorry. Even right before this show, I had a thoroughly unpleasant Twitter row with someone that's the head of AR at Google, right? And Elizabeth Warren was like posting a really lovely, she's mad. I posted a video about it. And he's like, well, she wants to regulate big tech, you know? Like that's the beginning and end of where a lot of people care about this. It's at their own door. Yeah. So I really think that these structural problems when it comes to how tech treats women, how tech treats trans people, how tech treats gay people and black people, when you're coming to those things force really being weaponized by prosecutors because of the Supreme Court, I'm ultra worried about that.
Yeah. And you have a dog in this, son. I mean, you are at risk as much, as anybody.
Sure.
And that's the problem enumerated rights doctrine, that this originalism doctrine, which is really being used as a cover. I don't think it's actually a genuine belief on the part of these justices, but they say, well, it's not in the Constitution, then it's not a right.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're all Americans, but my understanding in the Constitution, black people are 3/5 of a citizen. Is that correct?
That's right.
Now, if we're going to go full constitutional enumeration, I suspect a lot of people would have a problem with that. Not at least one Supreme Court justice, although...
Well, ironically, Clarence Thomas, who is black and is married to a white woman, did in fact in his additional opinion, bring up birth control, gay marriage. He didn't mention loving.
Strangely, not the loving.
Yeah,
issue.
He didn't mention the interracial marriage.
That isn't it. You know,
but because this decision, that's what this decision leads to. if it's not an enumerated right, well, that puts a lot of things that we take for granted in the 21st century off the table. And frankly, I don't think the mores and beliefs of the founders in the mid-18th century, many of them slaveholders, really should be informing how we operate in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, well, I don't want to get political. I think that it really is obviously too late.
A ship has sailed.
I mean, look with technology, we upgrade stuff. You know, we move on. The very idea that a document written in the 1700s should be applied to the 21st century seems, I admit, okay, I'm a foreigner, but it seems bonkers to me. You know, it's just you cannot apply 18th century rules to 21st century society and expect everything to be perfect.
I think that's what's so disturbing about this particular court. You know, their main lawyers have commented this, that, you know, but before this Supreme Court, like, you had conservative justices, and you could disagree with what they said because obviously they have a point of view, but they were committed to, you know, stare decisis. They were committed to let the precedent stand before, right? They were committed to the rule of law and not upending things and having the Supreme Court be respected. You know, with this ruling, the Supreme Court has truly gone to a radical place where they are upending all of that. And there's not that continuity that I think even I'm seeing a real crisis of conscience with many lawyers I know, because it's gone from a process that, while imperfect, they have faith in to really feeling like extremists are running the show.
It's become politicized as opposed to some sort of attempt to at least follow precedent and things like that.
I agree with
Although
that.
Although I have to say, I mean, the court has often in the past ignored stare decisis, and sometimes for very good reason. The John Cornyn brought up, the senator from Texas brought up Brown versus the Board of Education, which overturned the idea of separate but equal, effectively overturned a set law, saying, no, that's not enough. You've got to do more. So there are,
let's call it what it was, Leo. This was apartheid.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a pleasant word to use in the United States, but it was exactly the same with what was going on in South Africa.
Yeah.
So let's call it what it is, and let's not go back to it.
He compared reversing Roe versus Wade in a tweet. He says, now do Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education.
That was shameful.
I know. And unfortunately, that can really be interpreted to let's go back to segregation. Coming from a senator from Texas, it's not hard. It's not a stretch. I think his real intent was, well, I don't know. I'm not going to explain his real intent.
I do wonder what all those tech people who are moving to Texas are now thinking. Yeah. You know, it's just like, yeah, let's go to Austin and build a new tech community.
Yeah.
Oh, right. My daughter might have to, you know, might be sued for actually exercising her own bodily autonomy.
Yeah. About that.
Of course, Alan Butler, executive director, president of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, said, you know, law enforcement has a lot of data, credit card records, cell phone towers, that can get you in a lot of trouble. I mean, we send off a lot of data smog in our everyday transactions that could be used against us, particularly women. Although, as I said, I suspect it's going to extend past just women. And it's so clearly when you have a government that is willing and ready to use that information, it's seems like we got to do something about privacy. Yeah. But this has been an intractable problem for years. What do we do?
Well, I mean,
your internet searches are public. You're traveling. You go to an abortion clinic. It's public. you know, your messages, your emails. It's all public.
Your GPS.
Your GPS. It's all public. You can do everything.
A quick straw poll,
want.
Actually.
Go ahead.
I mean, a quick straw poll. How many of you keep your location data, your location tab switched on the phones?
I do, but I'm an old white man. I'm the only one not at risk on this panel. So it's safe
I
for
do
me,
because
but you should.
I'm tracking a lot of people. I track my mom. I track my cousin.
That's right.
Okay.
I track my husband.
Yeah.
I track my daughter.
I tell my daughter, like, you got to leave that on. And she says, I'm not leaving that on. Yes.
Exactly. Right.
I'm just paranoid and childless, but yes, it's.
Yeah. I mean, I have it turned on like a per app basis, right? As for the apps I trust, but you know, like everyone else, there's plenty of dirt you can find on me. And as to what can be done, you know, Leo, I really think this is if we're looking for historical parallels. If you look at the Democratic Party after Jimmy Carter's loss, right? You know, the Democrats had controlled the House for a long time before that. It really took the party 20 years to really find its footing again and move forward. I really think that what we're seeing right now is kind of the last cries of this last Democratic Party. And I think that moving forward, I think it's going to look more like, you know, these, you know, I'm not even talking politics like progressive versus more centrist Democrats. I'm talking about communication styles. If you look at an Elizabeth Warren or an AOC, they're just much better communicators. Like, they use these tools more natively that all of us use. They're able to tap into the emotion, and they really come from this more activist grassroots background. I think that what we're going to see is, rather than this kind of more you know, centrist, let's respect civility. I think the party is going to change to something much more focused on the state house and kind of more activist power. And, you know,
Stacey Abrams type.
Yeah, Stacey Abrams is the future, 100%. Yeah. And she's much more of a centrist Democrat.
I have to say, I've longtime Democrat, but I've somewhat lost faith in both parties. And unfortunately, what that leads to often is just a kind of nihilism about government in general. Like, government ain't going to do it. They have failed us. And so, for a long time, I fought against that. A lot of people in the tech community have that feeling about government. Screw it. Government has nothing to do with me. And there's nothing you can do. They're corrupt. And I'm starting to feel that way. But I know that there's no way forward with that. That's just nihilism. That's just let it all burn. And I don't think that's a solution either. Zeynep Tufekci had an excellent opinion piece. Back when the original decision was leaked, we need to take back our privacy. This is in the New York Times. She actually talks about an interesting point in time 130 years ago when the first portable cameras were invented. Louis Brandeis, who was to become a Supreme Court justice later, wrote, "Recent inventions in business methods call attention to the next step which must be taken for the protection of the person." He warned that laws were needed to keep up with technology 130 years ago, or Americans would lose their right to be let alone.
It's coming. I mean, in terms of involvement, though, check out Katie Mazouras, who, you know, classic security specialist, but she's now a delegate in her local state because
that maybe
she turned
is what
up
needs
to
happen.
Meetings.
People with technology
savvy. Yeah, you need to get in there at the ground roots.
Need to start getting involved. And, of course, it has to happen. That's what you were doing, Brianna. It starts locally.
100%.
It starts, 100%. Yeah, it starts local.
And I didn't win, but, you know, I took my skills to go on to build a very successful PAC that donates tons of money to races that otherwise would be forfeit. You know, like, I mean, even if you lose, you're still building up valuable skills. So we need more people like me to basically get involved and stay involved, because the country is literally on the line right now. And, you know, the thing that's so important is, I feel so strongly, we've got to, you know, my perspective on growing up in Mississippi is this. A lot of the people that are supporting this movement that's going increasingly fascist, it's because we failed them. Ordinary solutions have failed them. They don't see their lives getting better. They don't see their income like going up. And just like growing up in Mississippi, you have really you have the worst politicians basically taking advantage of that. If we are really interested in averting a civil war in this country, we've got to reach out to them and make the case to those voters about the difference that we can make in their lives. And we need to do it in real ways because, Leo, this
that's where Democrats have failed. That's where Democrats have failed.
100%. And this stalemate that we have with this culture war, it's not good for women being thrown out to be the ball in a game of kickball. It's not good for trans people. It's not good for gay people. It's not good for Black people. Like, we've got to go out there and make the case to ordinary Americans, or else the entire country is just going to end up like Mississippi in this cultural, political quagmire forever where nothing gets better.
I mean, I remember when you ran for office and they ran those photos of here are the candidates. And it was like two white guys in suits and then you. And it was just like they picked a shot which, okay, as a journalist, you look at it and you're just kind of like, yeah, they did that deliberately. You know, it was just, you got to get in there, though. And all credit to you for doing it and actually making it work. But it just...
It's depressing.
Do you know why they used that picture, Ian? They told me after the fact when I had it out with the Boston.
Oh, really?
They said because that was a picture they found online where I was smiling because of my standard shot. I was looking very seriously at the camera.
Jesus, that's dog ate my homework school of excuses.
The worst thing you can tell any woman is you ought to smile more. That is
try and
so horrific. So horrific. By the way, no one has ever told me I should smile more. What a surprise, right?
Leo, you should smile more.
Oh, thanks, Flo. All right, let's we have to talk about it. It's challenging. You are listening to a podcast that is mostly blue in a country that is very much divided between blue and red. I don't know what else to say. Many of you may not agree, maybe celebrating what's happened and maybe looking forward to a world where contraception is no longer available and gay people are thrown in jail and Black people are kept from drinking in the same fountain as white people. That may be something you think is a good thing. It's just not, we don't agree on that. And unfortunately, technology has a lot to do with how this is going to happen. And so it is part of our mandate to talk about it.
I think the point that was made earlier was very clear. It's like back in the back when abortion and gay people and trans people were illegal, there was no technology, and now there is, and it's going to be a massive problem, and we have to deal with it.
Let's take a little break. We're going to come back. We have much more to talk about, including, and Florence will explain this, your late grandma appearing in your Amazon Echo. That's a creepy idea. But first, a word from our sponsor, Audible. Now, I tell you what, Audible is a great way to stay up on what's going on in the world around us. There are some fantastic audio programs you can get at audible.com on these very subjects, say reproductive history, the story of Jane, the legendary underground feminist, the Jane in Jane Roe, Roe v. Wade, Bodies on the Line, Jane Against the World. Some really great stuff. If you want to become educated, if you want to learn about the world around you, if you want to be entertained, Audible is the place to go. I listen to Audible all the time. In fact, I actually would like to recommend. It's all about the man who made modern computing possible, John von Neumann, a brilliant Hungarian, a Jewish-Hungarian mathematician who came to the United States and an interesting figure, was very involved in the creation of the atom bomb, but also worked with Turing to create the foundation for modern computing. Fascinating. This is by Ananya Bhattacharya. And the audiobook, which is really, I got to play a little bit of this, narrated by Nicholas Cam, is just, this is why I listen to Audible.
More eerily prescient with every passing year. To fully understand the intellectual currents running through our century, from politics to economics, technology to psychology, one has to understand von Neumann's life and work in the last.
My recommendation, but let me tell you, Audible has so many audio, wonderful audio programs. Of course, they've got bestsellers, celebrity memoirs, mysteries. We're listening to a Lisa and I are listening together to a Dorothy Sayers mystery that is so good. We're listening to Dorothy Sayers' classic Strong Poison. It's a Lord Peter Wimsey mystery. And it's just part of our Audible subscription, which makes it so much fun. It's part of the Plus catalog. Hundreds and hundreds of audiobooks, performances, and more. So when you're in the mood for something, I always go through the Audible Plus catalog. Audible has the most amazing collection of performances. Podcasts, advertising-free podcasts, Audible Originals. They record some of the best science fiction that would otherwise not be recorded, like the Bobaverse. Those are Audible Originals. They're wonderful, beautifully produced. Ray Porter is one of the best readers in the world. He does such a good job with the Bobaverse. Highly recommended. Audible Originals for top celebrities, renowned experts, new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you get a title a month from their entire catalog. That's yours to keep forever. I have a library of 500, including the bestsellers, the newest releases. You also get access to the Audible Plus catalog, so you can always supplement those. You can listen to all you want and get more every month. More get added every month. So that's fantastic. The Audible app on your phone is great, but you can put it on your watch. I listen on my Amazon. I listen on my Sonos now, too, which is great. Audible. Let Audible help you discover the ways, new ways to laugh, to be inspired, to be entertained, to learn. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. All you got to do is go to audible.com/twit, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com/twit, or text twit to 500-500. They'll send you a link. You can download the app. Audible, audible.com/twit. Text twit to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. Audible, we love you. I got an email from somebody who says, haven't listened much to the podcast in the last 5 years because you told me about Audible, and now I just listen to audiobooks. Okay. Okay, I understand. I understand. That's
hoist
okay.
Hoist by your own petard. Yes.
Hoist by our own petard, but you know what? It's fine. It's fine. We love Audible. Audible.com/twit. Thank you, Audible, for your support and for stealing all our audience. It's kind of nice. There's so much you can listen to nowadays. I almost wish I had a long commute again. That was, you know, I would get 2 or 3 hours every day in the car. Now I'm like you. I don't have Flo. I don't have a commute anymore. And just have to find ways to listen to Audible. But I bet with the baby, maybe there's times when you're, you know, you're playing with the kid and she doesn't know you've got an Audible in your ear listening to a book.
Oh, yeah. I did that today.
Yeah.
I went to go play with her at the park. I was listening to...
Oh, yeah, honey. That's nice. Have fun on the slide. Yeah. What are you listening to?
Well, I am listening to a lot of cult...
You don't have to tell us if you... Cult stuff,
that's
huh?
That's why I don't... Yes, yes.
Oh, interesting.
I actually forgot the name of the book I'm listening to
All
right
about
now,
cults.
I have a book I can share.
Please.
Tokyo Vice, the show, the book the HBO show is based on,
yes,
is excellent. And the day Roe versus Wade came out, I just could not think about it.
Sometimes so you need a break, yeah.
100%. So I mainlined a book by Craig Allenson that is about a talking beer can in space that goes on space battles with all
what?
These people. It's the trashiest science fiction.
What?
I love him. He's a good friend of mine. He has written 15 books of these on Audible. It was called Match Game. It's such a silly novel.
Book
exactly
14 of
I
Expeditionary
needed.
Force series.
Expeditionary Force.
Oh, yes. And R.C. Bray narrates it. He's one of my yes. favorite narrators. It's
oh
one of the things
God.
That happens with Audibles. You start to find these narrators you just love. And
yep.
you search for not the author of the book. You search for the narrators.
yeah, but unfortunately that can backfire. because, for example, I love Bill Bryson's books. You know, he's done some really good ones.
Yes.
But his accent as a Brit is so annoying.
I love it when Bill Bryson narrates his own books. You don't like it?
Oh, God, no, because he sounds like the worst kind of transatlantic wanker on the planet. It's just like he gets words wrong, he gets Americanizations in there, and it's just a dull voice.
Yeah, he lived in the UK for a long time, right? I think he did.
Yeah, he moved. Well, he moved there, moved back to the US, and then moved back to the UK again. And yeah, he lived there for a long time, and it kind of, he's got that transatlantic thing going.
Let me play a little bit. This is a book my trainer actually is reading right now or listening to right now, and he strongly recommended The Body, A Guide for Occupants. Let me just, this is Bill Bryson talking. Let's just want to hear his voice. Long ago,
when I was a junior high school student in America.
Oh, I see what you're talking
about. I remember being taught by a biology teacher that all the chemicals that make up a human body
See, you're saying he's got a little mixed up. His accent's a little mixed up.
It's kind of like, it's a bit try hard. You know, I can't do an American accent. I don't try to do it because you all really take the piss out of me if I do.
But, just like the Brits do when I do my British accents.
Oh, God, yeah. Dick Van Dyke will never live that down.
Hello, Mary Poppins.
I love Mary Poppins in that film.
But, you know. Oh, Mary. All right, well, listen to Bill Bryson's books because they're really, really good. He's got a whole bunch of good books. All right, let's talk about Amazon Echo. The Remars conference was this week. Amazon does
this. I see dead people.
I hear them anyway.
I hear them.
Every year. They had Adam Savage was one of the speakers at Remars from, of course, the Mythbusters and I guess his new site, The Tested. But one of the things Amazon announced did not sit well with me. But you know more than I do. What is Amazon proposing?
Well, unfortunately, I was not in attendance for this conference for me to get the full picture. But from what I read and researched, Amazon is just putting that caveat. Amazon is proposing that you feed it your dead relative's voice. Let's just say it's your relative. It could be anybody. And then its AI will repeat it back to you.
In just a few minutes of recording, it'd probably be easy for Amazon to simulate me. I've got 100,000 hours of recording available online, but you don't need that much of grandma. A couple of minutes. Nope. And then
a
voicemail. And Echo could talk like her.
Yeah.
I don't know which is worse. If it sounds exactly like her and she's passed, is that creepier than if it sounds sort of like her, but it's a robot? Which is worse?
Right. I had this same thought. And actually, so my thought was, oh, God, is this something that would interfere with the grieving process? Because if you're like grieving...
Daddy, grandma's not dead. She's in the Echo.
I mean, there's a reason you give a goldfish to a kid as their first.
Is that true? People do that?
I mean, you know.
Time to learn about death. Lesson. Have a fish.
Yeah.
Wow.
The thing is, this isn't a new idea. So actually, in my Gizmodo article I brought up, there's this toy from Takara Tomy, which is a big toy manufacturer in Japan. And they have a smart speaker that actually can imitate a parent's voice. So like a parent who is traveling a lot, a parent who maybe isn't at home for bedtime could like theoretically, you know, read a story to their kid, which is nice. But the idea of somebody deceased, first of all, it removes the consent from that deceased person to exist in your life beyond the dead. And it also, again, my question was, how does this interfere with the actual grief process, which I am told by professionals in my life is a multi-step process. Sometimes it takes many, many, many years. Sometimes you never get over the death of somebody. So how will this affect that? But then there is the school of thought, and this is completely valid and fair, from those who have lost loved ones, like a parent, let's say, that this is actually something that could be quite comforting. So there's a lot of
it's just unknown
around this.
Yeah, and there could be a lot of psychiatric work that you might need later in life.
That's the first thing I thought about when I read about this. I'm like, okay, how is this going to interfere with the psychology of a person? And especially because we just got off the heels of that is AI human debate, which is kind of still happening. And so to kind of hear this, it's like, I don't know if I want to immortalize a dead one's voice, but there are people out there who do. So what do you do then?
Wasn't there a Black Mirror episode where there was a robot or an android that was a somebody's ex-wife or something had died? I dimly remember this. It's very Black Mirror, right?
See, and then that scares me. What if somebody takes, like you said, Leo, what if somebody takes your voice from the internet and wants to just parasocial relationship?
I think it's a good possibility it's already happened. And then I don't even know it, that I'm just a simulation. I don't know.
But it's already being used.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say my really good friend, Amanda Wynn Lee, she's a famous voice actress, right? She did Evangelion. She did Persona. She's like, if there's classic anime from the 80s and 90s, she's in it. I've no doubt she did a Sailor Moon episode probably at some point. And, you know, she was talking about how her fear with this was it was going to commodify what she does and let people use her instantly recognizable voice right off the bat without, you know, paying any rights.
I think that, you know, for her, she's a professional. They would have to license her voice, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, couldn't you just go in and tech, usually when they're bringing out new technology, they try to like put their best foot forward. They don't put forward the dystopian stuff it's going to do. Mm-hmm. They put forward their best case for it. And, you know, we start thinking like, how can you use this technology that can basically take someone's speech patterns and recreate it? Like, okay, maybe having a loved one narrate to you, but I think a lot of the use cases are deep fakes. You know, it's revenge porn that may be false.
Yeah.
It's making it harder for people to make a living. Their voice acting professionals. I mean, there are a lot of these simple fake. Yeah,
I could call up and say, "Hey, it's Frank. Could you wire me some money because I'm stuck here in Memphis with the Mobile Blues again?" And
well, I mean. Being used already in business email compromise. You know, we're already seeing this coming through where deepfakes are being used. It's very early days yet, but that, you know, it's getting worse. But, these kind of deepfake voices are being used in business email compromise, which cost, I need to check the figures, but about $5 billion over the last 5 years. So, you know, people are making a shed load of money out of this, and it's going to get worse because the money's there.
As usual, Black Mirror was there first. Jason Howell tells me it was the first episode of season 2 called Be Right Back. After learning about a new service that lets people stay in touch with the deceased, a lonely, grieving Martha reconnects with her late lover, and mirth and merriment ensue. It's...
there's a short story by Roger Zelazny, famous science fiction author.
Yeah.
You had gravestones with your with the dead relative's voice and brain installed in them. And he was trying to do share options to get his son, a dead person was trying to get his son to connect him with another dead widow. It was a deeply twisted and very, very funny story. I highly recommend it.
I might download all these old Black Mirrors and watch them again, because it's what a great series that was. Here's another episode from the same season. A failed comedian who voices a popular cartoon bear named Waldo finds himself mixing in politics when TV executives want Waldo to run for office. Just like you said, Brianna.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't it The Simpsons? The Simpsons actually predicted President Trump.
Yeah.
And also, didn't they have Ralph as running for president?
Maybe. So, I don't think we're very far off from this. I mean, I have Samuel L. Jackson in my Amazon Echo. I have Melissa McCarthy in my Amazon Echo. I love asking Samuel for the weather because he swears up a blue streak. And then you ask him, why do you swear so much? And his response is even more blue. It's hysterical.
But you see, with the old GPS TomTom things, John Cleese, there was a John Cleese Easter egg in there.
Yeah.
Where if you went against its navigation things enough times, John Cleese's voice would go saying, well, if you're not going to pay attention, I'm not going to talk to you.
I've said this before, but I had a TomTom voice that was GLaDOS from Portal, and she'd always yes. tell you the wrong direction. She'd say turn left when he was supposed to turn right. It was complete chaos. It was terrible. That TomTom really was the first to do all of that stuff. It's very, I guess the technique at this point is they have the robotic voice and they can apply what they call prosody, which is the mm-hmm. intonation, the inflection, the sound of a human's voice up on top of it. And they've gotten, I think, pretty good at that to the point that one company approached me saying, you know, you never have to read any more commercials. We can synthesize them all. And I said,
no. That's some ethically no. very, very tissue-thin area.
They're literally trying to sell this to radio and TV. That, you know, you just write the copy and then it'll read it in somebody else's voice.
And you're going to bet that some people with fewer issues on ethics are going to do that as well.
Yeah.
Isn't this what Google's doing, though, with the service
Duplex.
That like, calls the restaurant for you?
Yeah.
Duplex, thank you.
Yeah.
I forgot the name.
Although it's not trying to sound like you, but it is sounding pretty realistic, even to the point where...
It's synthetic, right?
It's synthetic when it's thinking, because sometimes a computer isn't thinking as fast as a human. When it's thinking, it will add a... just like a human would.
Yeah, they did that when they demoed it down.
So creepy.
I remember
Google
being
I.O.
so
down
so
at Shoreside.
Yeah,
you know they demoed it like, and they presented it as a feature. It's kind of like, yeah, okay, it'll sound like a human because it'll ask, it'll or it'll ah. This is a feature, apparently, not something that is deeply, deeply
something
creepy.
To be proud of. Here's this is Google I/O in 2018.
Is to help you get things done.
Sundar Pichai.
It turns out a big part of getting things done is making a phone call. You may want to get an oil change schedule.
So this is five,
maybe
4 years ago.
Call a plumber in the middle
Google
of the week.
Yep.
Or even schedule a haircut appointment.
I was sitting in that auditorium, baking
you know,
in the sun.
I remember that. Yes, it was very hot.
We want to connect.
Let me see if I can skip ahead to the call.
What happens is the Google Assistant makes the call seamlessly in the background for you. So what you're going to hear is the Google Assistant actually calling a real salon to schedule the appointment for you. Let's listen.
Oh, and the crowd goes wild.
Okay. It's not as bad as Apple, but it was pretty bad.
How can I help you? Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd. Sure, give me 1 second. Mm-hmm.
Those are still in use, by the way.
Are they?
If you go to Google Maps, you will see if you're looking at like the information for a restaurant or whatever, it'll show you like hours confirmed 2 weeks ago.
Because they were calling.
That's when somebody called
After
in.
This demo, I remember there was a furor. And the biggest issue was, we felt like you're messing with that human by pretending to be a human. Are you going to let people? And after that, Google did start putting an announcement. Hello. It didn't say I'm a robot.
This is a Google messaging or whatever.
Yeah,
service.
But it kind of, yeah, you know, you may not be talking to a human at this point. It's a little creepy. There's a scene in Westworld from the last season. Westworld's coming back tonight, so I'm trying to figure out
what. Is that tonight?
Tonight.
Yeah.
But season three was such a muddle, I had no idea what happened, so I'm trying to rewatch it. And in the very first episode of last season, Aaron Paul, who's a character in it, mm-hmm. is talking, has been being turned down for a job. Hi, I'm sorry, we just don't have anything right for you. And they have a conversation. And at some point, Aaron says, are you a robot? Because he's like, I don't think this is a human I'm talking to. He said, because he starts begging, is there anything I can do? I really need this job. And the thing is pretty non-responsive. So finally he says, are you a robot? And instead of saying yes or no, it says, I can help you with many things. I am your representative for this corporation. Just like Google saying, I'm not going to say I'm a robot, but I'm not going to say
that. But don't
you
do that with spam calls anyway? Because I get a lot of spam calls, and I'm a journalist. I have to answer calls. And you get a recorded message from someone who's like, "Hi, I'm Joe from the American Military, whatever association." And your first question used to be, "Are you a robot?" And they've got wise to that now. Right. It's like, "No, I'm not a robot." But if you say, "Do you love me?" or, you know, "What is 2 + 3?
Yeah.
Then that foxes them completely.
You but, should make you them know, identify trains, cars, and light traffic lights. And then maybe we'd know if they were robots or not.
Did you guys...
Sorry, go on.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Flo.
Okay, this is going to be an absolute digression. Ian's going to be like, "You interrupted me for this." Did you guys see the Paris Hilton deepfake that she made with her and Tom Cruise dancing?
No.
No.
Okay, is it the real Tom Cruise or is it fake Tom Cruise?
It's fake Tom Cruise. Because,
but real Paris Hilton.
I was going to say,
yes,
Tom Cruise dancing with a woman, but no, sorry.
Yes. but the Tom Cruise no, was, no. You knew it wasn't him because... And I love short men, so I'm married to one. But this person was Paris Hilton's height, and we know that she's very tall. So you can tell. But it's such a good deep fake that
I will play it. I'll probably get in trouble for it because every time I
did.
Yeah, every time I play video, I get taken down. We have an episode from 3 or 4 weeks ago where I played the video of the Queen having tea with Paddington the Bear, and the Paddington the Bear people. took the show down. It's still well, it was a, this no, week. I mean,
dang, Leo.
That's okay, Leo, because under the current British immigration rules, Paddington is being deported as an illegal Chilean immigrant. Sorry, Peruvian immigrant, God. And he will be sent to Rwanda for processing and then back to his home country. So you should be fine on that because our government are bastards.
I just figured. That since every news organization in the world, wait a minute, this is her having cereal with Tom Cruise. Is that another one?
That's another one. Oh my God, that's another
one. Let's see. This is Paris Hilton having cereal with Tom Cruise. He's sitting down, so we can't tell if he's short.
Just after a long day, cereal hits the spot.
It really does.
It's totally not him.
That's hot.
Oh God.
It looks just like. It looks just like him.
Cereal. I know.
Oatmeal, this is just...
But this is going to be a massive problem over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
If this was hot.
In this scary. Stuff will get spread around.
So this
if
is
you look at,
a yeah, guy named Miles, who is a kind of a Tom Cruise lookalike, but they put his Tom Cruise face on top of him. So he does the smile. He does a lot of the gestures. Is that the real Paris Hilton? I'm sorry, I'm still not.
Yeah,
clear.
I believe that's her. I believe she signed up for this grift.
Wow,
this guy is actually quite good. His TikTok is called
Deep
Tom Cruise.
Oh, there it is. There's the dancing one.
Which one? This one?
The first one where he. Yeah, that one.
Right. I don't want to be late to this premiere. We gotta go.
He doesn't sound exactly like Tom Cruise.
You should always run fashionably late. It's your night.
You were so absolutely beautiful.
See, he's right.
He's too tall. He should be shorter.
Well, again, I love a short man, but it's not Tom Cruise.
I think we're really going to wow the world.
Yeah, this really creeped me out.
I think most people.
That's really nasty. It reminds me of the second Iraq war where Saddam Hussein had all these looky likies.
Oh yeah, that's right,
protect him from assassination. And there's a famous joke that they were called into one room and said Saddam Hussein has survived an assassination attempt, and they all applauded. Bad news is he's lost an arm. So, you know, you've all got to go into the surgery room now. This is really deeply creepy.
Here's another one. This has 13 million views on TikTok of deepfake Tom Cruise jumping over Jordan Peele, who's, I believe, real. But what? How do you know anymore?
Just wanted to jump in to wish you luck. Congrats on the AFI Awards. Congrats on life.
Doesn't that? I mean, it looks so much like Tom Cruise.
I am so glad for this, though, because let me tell you, I am just mourning.
I'm sorry.
We lost
that's
Tom
not
Cruise
Jordan Peele.
Scientology.
That's Keegan-Michael Key. Sorry. I confused the two. Yes. Go ahead.
I'm just so sad that we lost Tom Cruise to Scientology that I feel like there should be a...
a non-Scientology Tom Cruise?
Cruise.
Like, yeah.
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 Like the actual Hollywood, you know, chum. Let's just... Because that's the Tom Cruise we wish we had, but he's not allowed to do that.
Oh, yeah, like for the production of this one, though, I mean, yeah. I hear a lot of the worry that this is going to like end up. I think if you looked at the actual production that these videos take, it's not like 5 minutes with the phone. Like these have extremely elaborate setup times. You know, additionally, you've got someone that's really, really, really darn good at doing a Tom Cruise like impression.
Of course. So they gave him a head start. But it's only a few 100%. Years before you could have deepfake grandma in your TikTok. Right?
Well, I think more specifically, I mean, disinformation targeted at, you know, women. Imagine how easy it would be.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
One of the things uncovered during Gamergate was there was actually an operation set up that you could actually buy destroying your ex's Google results, and flood it with allegations of porn or whatever. I imagine this technology being used for that, because in that case, it wouldn't even have to be that convincing.
You know, my initial thought was, well, then nobody will ever run for office again, because, you know, immediately deep fakes, you know, of you doing something reprehensible will show up. And then I just thought about it a little bit longer and I realized, oh, no, that's just going to open the floodgates, because now you can do anything you want and say, oh, it's a deep fake. Right? Or maybe the only people who run for office are people who don't care.
I was watching an old documentary and the CIA came up with an idea to create a porn film with Saddam Hussein and a young boy, and that this would apparently demoralize
the Iraqi
opposition and the rest of it. And it's like, well, first off, that's showing a deep lack of knowledge of human psychology, but also, really, when it comes to deep fakes, this is what's going to come through the line. You're going to get politicians saying things they haven't said, or, you know, people would like them to say.
It won't
and
matter.
We already have a trust problem on social, internet media.
Yeah.
And this is only going to make it catastrophically worse.
There's a turning
you
point.
You thought fake news is bad? Fake video is going to be
fake. Fake. There's a turning point in Neal Stephenson's latest book, which we did a book club of, called Termination Shock.
Oh, it's so good.
Isn't it good? And the queen of...
Has he done endings right yet? Because
No. You know what's good about this book is there's no attempt even to do an ending. It's just, he's not trying to wrap it up. It's a slice of life, right? It has no beginning, middle, or end. It's just like life. It's just normal. But the queen of the Netherlands at one point, who has been very careful not to influence this, it's a constitutional monarchy, so she doesn't want to influence in any way national politics. So she's like any good queen. She doesn't make political statements. But a deep fake comes out in which she says, you know, look, I don't want to say this, and I know we have a longstanding history of not getting involved in politics, but we've really got to do some geoengineering, and I'm all in favor, and the government falls as a result. And she goes, so she immediately rushes to the palace to make a denial video saying, look, that wasn't me. It was a deep fake. So she tapes it, but before she can be released, a second deep fake comes out, completely disarming any real denial possibility. In other words, gaming it in such a way that there's literally no denying it. She has to abdicate as a result.
Yeah.
Because you fill the zone with BS. You don't know what's real, and now it doesn't matter anymore. And that's where we're headed, I think, absolutely. Amazon has announced its first fully autonomous mobile warehouse robot. You want to unionize? I got the union right here. But unfortunately, right now all it can do is pick things up, put them down, and move them around.
Well, have you seen the video of it in action? Because basically,
it looks like a Roomba.
Yeah. It lifts it up.
Yeah.
And I looked at that and I was like, if you're moving at more than a mile an hour, then that thing's going to topple over because,
it's a robot. So it's not going to screw up. It knows what it's doing.
And I get it. It's Amazon. They don't want to actually pay workers a decent wage.
Anything not to pay workers. Oh, geez, you're right.
I have to say, you know, my friend...
So unstable. Sorry.
My friend Christopher Mims, he's a Wall Street Journal reporter.
Yeah, he's a top bloke.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic guy. You know, and he writes about supply chains. And I used to have this opinion as well that, you know, Amazon's work robots were going to, like, destroy their warehouses or destroy jobs at their warehouses. He's really changed my mind on that. And, you know, he has actually gone to these warehouses. You know, he literally, in his last book, tracked a USB key as it was sent around the world. It's fascinating. Journalism. But the conclusion he came to is that these robots are really built for very, very, very specialized tasks, and that we're so far away from a point where humans are completely taken out of the loop. It's just almost theoretical at this point. That it's really, these robots are built to basically aid human labor rather than replace it.
In an ideal world, these robots should do, I mean, no human should have to do a lot of these jobs, right? These are mindless, soulless jobs that people do just because they have to pay the rent. In a perfect world, humans wouldn't have to do these jobs. Robots would do them. But this is where the imperfection happens. And instead of just merely enriching Jeff Bezos, that there would be such a surplus created by these highly productive machines that people wouldn't have to work, or could work less, or in other words, get rid of the soul crushing jobs. As long as people can eat, that's fine. But all it really does,
sweet old fashioned thing.
I know, it just enriches oligarchs, and they don't care. That great, don't have to wear, don't have to have unions anymore. Thank goodness, we can just have robots do it.
Bezos has done this before. He got an award from a German magazine, which he just happens to own a stake in, for being the best entrepreneur in the
world. That's hysterical. he owns a part of the magazine. That's hysterical.
Oh, yeah, no. He owned it, and they gave him this award. And he was like, well, if you look at German Amazon workers, they earn above national levels.
Yeah.
And he neglected to point out that it took three strikes and good union laws to do that.
That's right.
In America, however, Amazon warehouses cut the standard wage for compared to competitors, and they, as we saw this week, are burning through workers faster than they can actually recruit them. So this kind of robot is definitely needed for Amazon, because they treat people like that. I mean, I've never yet met someone who worked for Amazon who was kind of like, yeah, it's a great culture. Everyone cares for each other. Yeah. It just, this is purely, let's economize costs.
But the commercials, they pay 20 weeks of leave. They pay $15 an hour. But people seem so happy.
You know, the worst commercials, almost as bad as those, actually maybe a little worse than those, are the Meta commercials.
Oh.
This is the new thing for big tech. Google and Microsoft and Apple have so far avoided doing this, where they're really these self-serving political pieces, essentially.
Google does it too.
Does Google do it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, they do, because they know the search engine is their big money maker. And so they're always like, the search engine is what gets your life
so
going.
Good.
Which is
It really makes everything better, doesn't it?
Unfortunately, true for me.
Yeah.
I mean, we dug into the Amazon when Amazon announced, we're sponsoring education for our workers, and we dug into it. And it's kind of like, they're willing to pay $5,000 per year to educate people. That might get you two or three textbooks, forget
half
tuition fees, forget exactly.
Half a semester.
You know, it was just kind of like, we're sponsoring education for our workers. Yeah, right. And in the meantime, they cripple themselves working for you.
Maybe they're building a time machine so you can go back to the 90s where, tuition was $5,000.
When I went to Yale, it was $7,000 a year. It was nothing. It was
Americans don't believe me on this,
back
but
in the last century.
I was actually paid to go to university. The UK government paid my tuition because I was raised in a single parent family. The UK government paid my tuition. They gave me $2,000 a year to live on in a subsidized education. And Americans don't believe that actually happened. And trust me, in Europe, it happens.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the best way to do this stuff.
Now, I have
to say, thanks for rubbing it in our face. I really appreciate this. It's a great week for that. How's your bodily autonomy? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, how's that going?
But this is a stupid thing because, you know, Steve Jobs was able to go to, you know, UC Berkeley courses for a pittance. My brother-in-law was able to fund his New York University education by being a taxi driver part-time.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore. No. That has been shut out because, you know, prices have gone up.
It's not even
have gone
education.
Down. It's ridiculous.
It's the
whole
rent.
Point of education.
It's the rent. You cannot live on minimum wage in any part of this country.
But if we're going to progress as a society, we need to educate people cheaply. Yeah. And at the moment, education is the privilege of the rich.
The cynic in me says that people like Jeff Bezos don't want educated people. They want all you women to have more babies, and they want those people to go to work in those warehouses. By the way, Asthmatic in our chat room has friends who work in Amazon warehouses. They say they love the robots, probably because they're doing heavy labor that they don't want to do. But I have to say, in the long run, I don't care what Christopher Mims says. In the long run, the plan is to replace you with those robots, right?
Yeah, I mean, but they're literally running out of people that can do this job at this
point.
That was
the most wild story of the week. I'm going to take a break, but that was the most 100%. Wild story of the week. I couldn't believe it, but we'll tell you in just a second. Great. So nice to have Ian Thompson here. Register.com. He's the news editor there. Last minute, we asked Brianna Wu to join us. It is wonderful to have you. Thank Frank for, getting the Ethernet.
And superb Porsche poster in the background.
Yes.
Thank you. I actually own that.
Is that your Boxster? Wow.
No, nice. that's my 911. Oh. That's an air-cooled 911 from 1986.
Ooh. Does it sound like a Volkswagen?
No. Ouch.
Well, air-cooled Porsche.
Oh, Leo.
That's all the,
come on. But Leo, do you want to race Brianna?
No.
Well, he's got an electric vehicle.
I have some good torque. I have some very good torque right from the
I do want to race Brianna, but just on a racetrack where we both,
wouldn't that be fun?
If we kill ourselves, that's fine.
That would be really fun.
I tell you, I'll bring my motorcycle and I will be able to beat you even in an EV, Leo.
Oh, really? Nice.
Mm. Yeah.
I wonder
if
we could rent out Sonoma Raceway and do a twit race.
Lisa, I'm going to let Lisa race.
I would buy tires
you,
for that.
Though, because she is a speed demon and I drive like an old man.
Ooh.
I am an old man. Also with us from Gizmodo, Florence Ion. So nice to see you. And
I'm
Sailor
happy
Moon.
To be here.
Yeah, we love having you here. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Also, a last minute call because I thought, we really probably should have some women on the show because, maybe, just maybe. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. Stock trading can be a wild ride. I have this conversation with my kids because they're young and they love the idea of meme stocks and cryptocurrency. And, they see people around them seemingly getting very rich because nobody mentions the fact that their crypto investments just dropped 40%. They just talk about when it's a good thing. It's a stock trading, crypto investing can be a wild ride. I would submit, and I tell my kids this, the thrill of risking it all is best enjoyed in moderation. It's like casino gambling or eating questionable street food. Fun, but careful. If you're playing the market, I hope for your sake you're stashing some safer money in a place like Wealthfront. We're talking about building your wealth over time here, building it up for buying that first house or first car, or putting your kids through school, preparing for your retirement. You might say day trading stocks is going to be the secret to my success, but Wealthfront has a lot of data to show that time in market almost always beats timing the market. Their globally diversified portfolio is automatically optimized to hit the goals you set, the risk level you choose. Without a lot of attention on your part, they automatically rebalance. They do things like tax loss harvesting. In fact, they actually invented the software for it. They give you automatic tax breaks, which when market goes down, you still can, boost your returns with these tax breaks. It's really great. You can also personalize your portfolio. This is something new. They realize people, you know, they like set it and forget it, but sometimes they want some input. So you can choose from healthcare funds, cannabis funds, yes, crypto funds, all handpicked by Wealthfront's financial experts, social responsibility, clean energy. It works so well, Wealthfront is trusted with more than $27 billion in assets. Nearly 500,000 people are using Wealthfront to build their wealth. Investopedia named Wealthfront the best robo-advisor for 2022. You know, you'll be amazed when you get to my age. You go, wow. You could say, thank you, Leo. To start building your wealth and get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/twit. W-E-A-L-T-H, Wealthfront, F-R-O-N-T.com/twit. Start building your wealth, wealthfront.com/twit. Especially if you're younger, this is the time to do it. I know it's tough, but just a little bit each paycheck, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed. Yeah, Amazon said maybe this is why they're so big on robots. As we continue to grow, we're going to get to the point where there won't be enough people to staff our warehouses anymore. The company is partly because they chew through people. With their automated hiring and firing, they actually chew through people. A leaked internal research report from mid-2021, Recode got it, said that Amazon could run out of people to hire in U.S. warehouses by 2024. That's not far off.
Nope.
Not far off. Increasing wages could help. Certainly would expand the labor pool, but I think Amazon isn't too interested in that. Increasing warehouse automation. Yeah, robots work cheap, 24/7. Anyway, nothing more to say except, although I do, you know, and I've told this story before, the phone company at the turn of the last century, in the early 1900s, some executive said, you know, if we keep growing at this rate, we're going to run, there won't be enough women in the U.S. to be operators. We're going to run out of women. I guess men couldn't do that job. They figured out a way to do it. Automating, actually. Mm-hmm. And you didn't need operators anymore.
Am I muted still?
You're back.
Oh, okay. No, originally they hired men to do telephone operator jobs, and they found they were really bad at it, so they got women in to do it.
You're kidding!
Who were much more... No. When telephony came in... They took message boys who had been carrying telegrams around.
Call for Philip Morris.
Put them into call thing.
Yeah.
And then as the great hacker crackdown recounted, you know, the boys were playing around with the system and were basically causing havoc. They got women in who are far more responsible and got the job done properly. And yeah. So this was how the thing developed.
Oh, I had no idea. We couldn't be trusted with the phones.
Well, you don't trust teenage boys with a telephone connection.
No, that's
I think
true.
If anything over the last 100 years has taught us, that's one of the big ones.
Wow. Elon Musk still trying to buy Twitter. That's it. Just thought I'd tell you.
Was that the update?
Yeah, that's the update. We got? Yeah.
It seems to have fallen dormant.
Still wants to buy it. He needs more data. Says Gizmodo. Twitter gives it to him. He says it's still not enough. Twitter gave him the fire hose. His concern, he says, is there too many bots on Twitter.
Oh, please. This is a pump and dump scheme.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically I bought a shareholding in Twitter. Now I'm going to hype that up. I would like to see what shares he's sold since then. So I don't know, but the guy's a fraudster.
Well, I have to think if you're on the board of Tesla, you might not be happy with your CEO saying he's worried about keeping Tesla out of bankruptcy. That's the latest.
While buying a huge amount of Bitcoins. Sorry, Brianna, sorry.
I was just going to say, I read a book recently. It was called Ludicrous. And
yes.
It was basically the history of Tesla.
Great book.
Excellent. excellent 10 out of 10 book. And, you know, I had not really tuned into the Elon thing before Twitter because, you know, like I support EVs, but I don't own a Tesla. I'm not really a huge stakeholder in you know, their success or failure. And really going through the entire history of the company. And, you know, like some of it admittedly, I think is just the sleight of hand that allows you to, you know, start a successful company, right? Like telling people you're going to have investors and then securing all the investors later. That's kind of low level stuff. But some of it, like there's very clearly a pattern with Elon of beyond overpromising and then just never, ever, ever delivering. A really good example, the Tesla Supercharger network, when it came out, they promised that not only was it going to be neutral, it was going to, because of the solar panels that were added to it, that was going to add back into the electrical grid. Never happened. And then it was battery swaps in Tesla. You know, he comes out on stage and he has this Audi filling it up with gas. And he's like, in the time it takes to do that, we're going to replace the battery pack in the Tesla, let's do two of them, right? And it's this pattern over and over and over and over with the guy, like full self-driving. It never comes to fruition. And I think you have to come to the at least I've come to the conclusion, this is someone with so much money that people can't say no to. He's just fundamentally not an honest actor at this point. And it's very troubling to me to have so many people I know that work at Twitter and have him just destroying the company's stock price.
I do feel bad for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We refer to Elon deadlines in the industry. I mean, according to the Elon deadline from 2018, we're supposed to be on Mars right now.
Yeah.
You know, there are supposed to be equipment based on SpaceX technology on Mars. He goes through deadlines that, in a way that makes Douglas Adams look like a complete amateur.
He brings out the best in people, I must say.
Well, no, I mean, just like anyone can promise anything, but Musk seems to make a habit of overpromising, overstressing, and it's just so infuriating.
There's another deadline looming. Tesla's AI Day is September 30th, and Elon has promised that their humanoid robot will appear. Now, he announced this robot a year ago.
Oh, that was
with a human in a suit, a robot suit. he says the Tesla bot will be designed to handle dangerous and boring tasks in a factory. He also sees the humanoid as a companion down the road. I think Elon reads a little too much science fiction.
But I mean, DARPA has been working on this for 10 years.
It's not
the
easy.
Atlas program.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really,
what about Boston
really
Dynamics?
Difficult.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, you know?
Because,
well, look,
you know,
at,
I mean,
look at the Tesla Roadster. You know, if you have this, Tesla has this pattern. Well, they will, you know, with a car that they're trying to bring to market, like the Tesla Roadster, you know, they hand build a model, right? And then they start trying to put all the pieces together to actually ship it and get it to market. You know, and you can cheat it in that way, but like, where's the Roadster? They promised that in what year was that? Was that 2018?
Yeah.
Like, it's a really long time ago that people that put down, what was it, a $10,000 deposit or something? Like, imagine if they'd actually put that money in the stock market. I don't believe Tesla is going to make headway on something. Boston Dynamics, which is a huge factory here in Boston, like, where they haven't been able to do that in like longer with the best people in the world doing it. I flat out don't believe it.
Meanwhile, Twitter does continue to innovate, surprisingly. Yeah. If I were a Twitter employee, I would be a little nervous. Maybe they've been working on this for a while. They've added something new called Notes. Remember, Twitter bought a newsletter service called Review, and I suspect this is their kind of version of Review. You can write a long piece, kind of a medium length piece, and then tweet about it. It's not open to all yet, but it will be soon. It's called Twitter Notes. We're testing a way to write longer on Twitter. Is that a good thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited about this feature. You know, I haven't activated, I have permission to do it, like the thing where you can have people pay you for content on Twitter.
Like Substack, yeah.
Right, exactly. And I think if you're marrying that with, you know, with the ability to write long form pieces, this is something I'm 1,000% going to participate in. Because, you know, Twitter, that's where my home is. That's where I know most. That's my biggest professional network.
And if you are writing a blog post, of course, the first thing you do is you tweet it.
Right.
So why shouldn't the blog post live on Twitter then?
100%.
Yeah.
They've actually shown that on Substack, all the Substacks that are large happen because of basically Twitter controversies on your Substack. So why not just cut out the middle person and just have all the outrage on Twitter?
Is there a risk, though, for Twitter of adding too many features, making it more and more complicated? I mean, what really got Twitter started was it was very simple, right?
Yeah.
I do miss the old Twitter news feed, but, you know, it used to be that this was a fire hose of information that was coming down, and then they did the Facebook thing and, you know, carved out certain areas. It's annoying as hell.
Here is, let me pick, there's some, if you follow Twitter right on Twitter, you'll see some articles now. Here, I'll click one. This is a published note, a new way to write beyond 280 characters on Twitter. And it looks pretty nice. It still has the Twitter. It's wrapped on the left and the right with the Twitter menu and the trending and all that. You could put pictures in it. I think it's pretty cool. Yeah?
Yeah.
So will you write on this, Brianna, you think?
100%. I mean, you know, it's... I've noticed with the Twitter algorithm, it rewards you when you do fewer tweets, and they all get more engagement. So I think with something like this, you could really game the algorithm rather than doing, you know, 10 tweet threads. So
I'm not a fan of the tweet thread. We argued about this. We always argue about this on This Week in Google because Jeff Jarvis loves the idea of having 20 tweets. One of 20, two of 20, three of 20. And I just say, why just write a Medium post and link to it? I don't understand. But he says, but then you can respond to different parts of the thing. So it, I guess that makes sense. It becomes a tree of conversation. Say,
as a journalist, I'm willing, Florence, I'd welcome your view on this. But as a journo, if you're in a keynote and you're live tweeting.
Well, that's different. That's live blogging. Okay. And that is chunk by chunk, because you're tweeting each thing that's announced. But so many people write like think pieces as a 20 tweet tweet storm. And I just, maybe it's just me. I'm an old fashioned guy.
It can't be hard to follow along, not to mention that, like, I pay for Twitter Blue, which I find to be worth $3 a month, frankly. Just
I've just canceled my subscription.
Really? Interesting.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Really? So it's half and half. Florence and I both are Twitter Blue, happy Twitter Blue users. And you guys just canceled.
I did it because I needed the countdown. I just, my...
the untweet this. The untweet this. Yeah. You might want
to... No, that was really good. But I've got to say, I did it for a few months. And then when Elon announced you can pay for a blue tick, I was just kind of like... I'm getting out of here because I don't want people to think that I actually paid for this.
No, but it's not that way yet, right? This is just something Elon wants to do.
Man, I earned my verified badge.
Yeah.
Likewise, yeah.
We had to get it the old-fashioned way, bribing somebody.
Yeah, you had to have a legitimate job that
that's right, yeah.
Verified.
I didn't bribe anybody.
You had to be a part of an organization.
Yeah, I participated in a...
Sorry, Brianna,
I was just going to say, I participated in a Twitter UI user group when they were trying to refine the Twitter Blue product feature in the early days because they were trying to figure out what people liked about it. And I'm not allowed because I signed an NDA to talk about it, but I can say the questions that they asked me did not give me a lot of confidence that the product is going to be moving in a better direction. So, you know, when Elon announced he was... going to buy Twitter, I was like, I'm not giving this jerk store $5.
He doesn't own it.
I know.
Now's the time to support it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I don't know. I just, when that came up, it was just kind of like, are we...
I don't even remember what I get for Twitter Blue. I just want to support Twitter. I no longer know what I'm getting. You get a paywall.
You know, I pay for certain publications, you know, because journalism costs money. And I'm quite happy to do that. But when Twitter started just like, okay, well, you can pay for certain things and pay for certain privilege, hell with that. I'll pay to read. I won't pay to get, you know, to be like aristocracy. Britain's done that. And look how well it worked in the US.
I wouldn't mind being Sir Leo Laporte or your dukeship. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, also Prince Andrew, how well that
works. Oh, yeah, well, that's, you know, that's because that's hereditary. No, that's a hereditary problem. That's not, see, that's the hereditary titles that aren't good. I want to buy my title.
No, no, you've got exactly the same problem in the US at the moment. I mean, everyone's just like, oh, well, Britain is so hereditary. Really? You had George Bush II, the idiot son of the president.
Oh, yeah, we have our
You've
own
You've got
oligarchs.
The Clinton administration.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
oh,
you've got oligarchs all the way through the route.
Yeah.
And aristocracy is the death of society. We've learned this over
At least
centuries.
With the Queen, you get Paddington the Bear and tea.
Oh, honestly,
well, I have to tell you, I saw, you know, along with Sailor Moon, which I saw every episode, I read The Princess Diaries. And it seems to me the being a royal figure has a lot more problems than I thought.
Do you want to be a princess, Brianna?
No.
Sailor Moon was rough. It was rough. That
Sailor
last
Moon?
Season
oh
that
my God.
You never saw here. Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. There's a season that didn't come to the U.S.?
Yeah, Sailor Moon Stars.
Oh. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, you can watch it now on Netflix because Viz redid it as Sailor Moon Crystal, but the original series is how
good.
We all got.
Yeah.
Was it grim?
Oh. Yeah, Sailor Moon's dark, dude.
Very dark.
This episode brought to you by ExpressVPN. You never run out of anything to watch when you have ExpressVPN. And let me tell you, nowadays we're talking about it. Privacy is very important. This is one way to really improve your privacy. You've heard we were talking about data brokers, the middlemen collecting and selling all the digital smog you're leaving behind you. They can easily collate all that information, stitch together detailed profiles all about you, your browsing history, your online searches, your location data, and then they sell it to anybody who will want it for a surprisingly low amount of money, I might add. You might be surprised to learn the same data brokers also sell your information to the Department of Homeland Security, the IRS. Who wants the tax man showing up at the door because of some search they did on their phone? And, well, it could be a lot worse than that. So mask your digital footprints. Protect yourself like I do with ExpressVPN. One of the nice things about ExpressVPN is you don't appear on the net as yourself. You have an IP address that is ExpressVPN's. So when you do that Google search, Google doesn't say, oh, hi, Leo. Google thinks it's ExpressVPN and hundreds of other people using that same IP address. I love it that ExpressVPN also invests in their infrastructure, so they rotate IP addresses. So that's one of the reasons you can use ExpressVPN with things like the BBC iPlayer, which really try to stop you from doing that. It works. It still works. So get a unique IP address. Watch content anywhere you want. Stop big tech from tracking you. Protect yourself with an encrypted tunnel, no matter where you are. I'm going to be traveling tomorrow, staying in a hotel all week. You better believe I'm going to bring an ExpressVPN with me. 100% of the network traffic is encrypted. You can run ExpressVPN on almost everything you've got. Macs, PCs, Linux, Windows, iOS, Android. You can even put it on your router, some routers. You can put it on a smart TV. Really protect your privacy, protect your security, and all you have to do is turn it on with one button and you're done. So make sure your online activity and data is protected with the best VPN money can buy. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Go there right now. You'll get 3 extra months free when you buy a 1-year package. That brings the price down about less than $7 a month. That's a heck of a deal. EXPRESS, ExpressVPN.com/twit. And if you're at all curious, there was a great article on Bleeping Computer about how ExpressVPN works. They're so smart. They use a custom Debian install that refreshes every time the computer reboots every single day, so nothing is saved on the hard drive. Their trusted server technology runs in RAM, can't write to the hard drive. You're completely anonymous on ExpressVPN. They're doing God's work. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for your support. Prime Day, July 12th.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Well, don't worry, you won't get to forget. You'll get plenty of reminders. It's a national holiday. I don't know. I have never bought anything. Actually,
I've never participated either.
Yeah, I feel like
me either.
It's not going to be a deal. You know who I feel bad for is all those writers at Gizmodo who are going to be working on the 12th and the 13th, right? Looking for deals on Prime Day.
Actually, that's not quite true, Leo. Prime Day had the Wirecutter does a special guide for Prime Day where they
remember they were going to boycott. They boycotted last year. They went on strike. Remember?
Yeah, and they won
the last Thanksgiving.
The power of unions. Mm-hmm.
Did they win?
They did win. They did win. Yeah. But did what
they,
I was going to say is
they got a union.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Right on.
Their union, 100%.
Right on.
But they brought out something and they're like, Wirecutter would like to announce we do not recommend this thing that happens to be on sale right now, which is a cowboy hat for your dog.
They're so wrong.
Rocket needs a cowboy
hat for your dog. I don't care how much it costs. It's worth it.
Though I did falter in that one instance.
So you have bought something on Prime Day, huh?
I did.
Mm-hmm. A cowboy hat for your dog. Is your dog's name Rocket?
My dog's name is Rocket.
Did Rocket the podcast come before Rocket the dog, or vice versa?
Yeah, I was gonna name my dog Optimus, and then we decided on the name Rocket.
Like Optimus Prime?
Yeah. Optimus. And then we named the podcast Rocket, and I was like, Rocket's a good name for a dog. That's Rocket's name.
Rocky, Roro.
Yeah.
Rocket is a very good name for a dog, actually.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it. So I should
nobody steal my idea.
I should give you a plug for your podcast at this point, which is named the same as her dog, Christina Warren, who's going to be on next week on Twit, Brianna Wu, Simone de Rochefort, Rocket, Accelerated Geek Conversation.
Look at this. We're nearly at episode 400,
look
Leo.
Look at you. Look at you. It's a great show.
400 episodes.
You deserve it. You're a great show. We'll all
I just think it's so rare, like women in get to like have a voice in you know everything that goes on.
Yeah.
We're one of the oldest shows on Relay, and like 400 quality episodes. Like Simone is awesome.
That's amazing.
Christina's great. Oh, it's a,
all
it's
three of you, but you
got
to put in a word with Simone. She doesn't return my calls anymore. I don't know if I said something.
No,
because we have you on, we have Christina on. I want Simone on as well. I love Simone.
I joke that she's from another planet. Like I've done 400 shows with her. I don't really understand her. So
I just want her to do my ads. She does such a good job.
Oh, she's great.
I just want her. Simone, read this ad. I used to go in on a radio show in San Francisco, KGO, hosted by a guy named Ron Owens. Every time I'd go in, you know, do my little 15 minutes tech segment, he'd make me read the ads. Pissed me off. It was a scam, as it turned out. Google News has won in Spain. You may remember that the Spanish government wanted Google to pay for the snippets. This goes back to that whole snippet thing. After 8 years, Google shut down saying, we are not going to pay publishers to put their name in our search results. That's nuts. And when the government said you have to.
Anyway.
Yeah, they're going to steal a copy anyway. Spoken as a guy whose copy's probably getting stolen once in a while.
Our copy gets ripped off all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, okay. Well, we're just going to take this stuff and you're going to have to deal with it.
But doesn't Google send you traffic? I mean, honestly, doesn't most of your traffic come from Google?
This is really interesting because when we looked at our traffic a couple of years ago and then today, Facebook were trying to get us to pivot to video and we told them to basically bugger off. And boy, hasn't that worked returns, because everyone that pivoted video got screwed so badly. Google is... We've had our problems with Google when we changed our... from a .co.uk to .com. But I'm sorry, these people are absolute bastards. They go, you must do what you're told. And it's like, no thanks. We'll carry on as we are. It's worked out in the end, but I'm sorry. This is a really big issue for independent journalism.
So in 2014, Spanish copyright law said publishers can charge Google News to use their links and headlines. Google's response, very famously, was to leave Spain. It's not that Spain relented. It's just that a European copyright directive adopted in Spain in November allows online aggregators and platforms to use news snippets without permission from publishers if it's, quote, a very short extract or just individual words. Is your concern that people will read the snippet and then not go to your article?
No, it's not that at all. It's the fact that they are basically driving advertising information traffic using our copy and not paying for it. You know, it's like, it costs money to get good journalism out there. And Florence will, I'm hoping, will agree with me on this. You know, it's, we have to pay for journalism. And Google saying, well, we just took the headlines and a couple of lines and we're not actually going to pay for it. But it's pretty shameful, to be honest.
Yeah. By the way, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. I'd love to know what you think.
I was going to say it's very difficult to be a journalist in this climate right now because I am constantly finding myself having to justify why somebody should be paying money to read stuff that I effectively post for free. But the big thing that sucks is the SEO game of it all when you have copycat sites that just re-aggregate your reporting. And like that is where that is what Google's surfacing before, you know, the actual article. And it can get really frustrating.
They've made a business plan out of this.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically screw the people that actually make the news. We're just going to scrape it and run it. Gizmodo has done some fantastic reporting, and all modesty required, the Reg has done some pretty good stuff as well. But I mean, this stuff costs money. You know, we have journalists to pay, and Google just scraping it. Yeah. Scraping and showing, I'm sorry, it's just like you're a parasite. That's the way I see it.
I'm looking at the, and by the way, this is just recently revamped, the Google News site for technology. I see articles. I mean, honestly, I think this drives traffic. I look at this and I say, oh, yeah, I want to read that. No, I don't want to read that. I mean, it's not enough that it doesn't give you enough information that I wouldn't read the article. It's sending traffic to you.
If you actually look at the titles that are there, and then you wonder who's paying for it.
Oh, these aren't your headlines?
Well, we don't pay for headlines. Other companies do.
Ah. Okay.
I can't name names, but companies pay for headlines.
So you're saying somebody like, I don't know, let's say some fruit company in Southern Bay Area might pay The Verge to say nice things in a headline, or to just even mention them in a headline, or
I was going to try and help Ian out by just saying deals are made.
Yeah,
I had never heard of this.
Wait a minute. You know how? Remember how in the entire 10 seasons of 90210 there was always a Dr. Pepper or Diet Dr. Pepper in the scene and other beverage.
But that's a little different. You're not going to that show to find out what beverage to drink. I'm going to a site that for technology reviews and news, and they're getting paid to show that content, that's putting your thumb on the scale.
Well, no, I mean, okay. I'm dealing under British libel law, so this is...
No, be careful. I don't want you to say anything. Name any names. But this is a blind item. So do it as a blind item.
Okay.
Ted Kessel.
There are at least three publications I know of that when they do their top five, whatever it is, that's led by the advertising department, not by the editorial department.
See, from my background at Ziff Davis for years...
I didn't mention ZD.
No. I'm just saying that was verboten. You did not do that. And we, of course, we continue to follow those editorial standards at Twit. There is a very clear, bright line between advertising and editorial. And by the way, that advertisers all the time will constantly say, when are you going to interview our CEO and stuff? And we say, we're not. So that's, I mean, but you just have to draw that line. You certainly don't have the sales department going and saying, hey, how'd you like to be on our list of the top 10 gizmos for 1999, and then you pay me and I put you on that list. That's an ad. And then, by the way, the FTC, by law, you have to say sponsored or ad, and they're not doing that.
Absolutely not. No. I mean, look, when I was on PC Mag, we spent 2 days going through our best of at the end of the year series, and there were arguments, and in one case, a fistfight over
this. It's editorial.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
But at the moment, it's who pays.
I miss the days when journalists would get into fistfights.
I've had more than a few, and they're great fun.
All right.
Oh God, yeah.
But we're not going to name. We're not saying which companies, and we're not saying which publications. I'm not surprised in this day and age. Look at you. Go to YouTube. It's pretty clear if you watch any YouTube tech channel that there's something going on there.
It's just who is playing the game the right way. Yeah. Who is playing the game? Who has the money for the resources? Who has the money for an SEO team? Who has the money for a team that will like jump in and all the, you know,
I'm disappointed.
Content things that Google wants to add. It's like all of this stuff adds up to your overall ranking as an entity on the internet. And so correct me where I'm wrong, but I feel like that's what kind of we're alluding to.
No, but that's not a tit for tat. That's not, here's a dollar, you put me there. You're saying they're actually paying for it.
Oh, they're absolutely paying for it.
That's bad, by the way.
And I agree with you, Florence, totally. It's not all publications, but publications with a good name, with a good editorial history, are basically selling themselves out on the street.
I'm so disappointed
for
to hear
cheap
that.
Reviews.
It's also very bad for our industry because as soon as people stop trusting that we're saying what we truly believe as opposed to what we're being paid to say, the whole thing collapses.
But you've got to understand that these magazines, these publications are being run by private equity companies who don't give a hell about the long
term. They don't care anymore about integrity.
They want 3 to 5 years returns, and then they can dump it after creating huge management fees for themselves. So it's a win-win for them.
Bing, 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 bing.
I'm sorry to be Debbie Downer on this.
Brianna, does this shock you?
What shocks me is I'm not a journalist. Like, I write occasional pieces, but I'm not.
And you're a damn good writer as well.
I appreciate that. But I went to journalism school and I did investigative work. The biggest story I ever found was that the coaches at my school were being paid millions of dollars for classes that did not exist. I did it through investigating the budget, going through interviewing people, following the money. This was something I could do, but I quickly came to the conclusion that it was not going to be an industry where I could have a Porsche collection if I kept on pursuing that field. And it just, the workplace is so abusive to every one of y'all, and you're being screwed over by everything involved, like the companies you work for, Google, the people that mistreat you and yell disproportionately at women nowadays. It's just a mystery to me why any of you stay in this field when it's so clearly underpaid and abusive. So I feel sorry for you. Thank you for your service, but it
sucks. We love it. You know, it's a tough job, but we love it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, democracy dies without information, and tech democracy dies without information. And And I'm sure Florence has got the same. PR companies are all, come and join us and the rest of it. There's an important job to be done.
I have some standards. I would never work in PR. I have some standards.
I did 3 years there. I launched ActiveX in the UK in 1996.
ActiveX, Ian.
I know. I still feel guilty about that one.
Do you know how many times you were... somebody uttered a curse word toward you because of ActiveX.
Oh God, it was late shaming
90s installs.
No, I mean seriously,
Microsoft ActiveX.
Yeah, no, I mean I did 3 years in PR in the mid 90s.
You promoted the use of Microsoft's ActiveX technology.
Okay, this is a shameful admission.
This is a shameful admission.
At the same time, they gave me a non-disclosure agreement, which I didn't sign, and they forgot about it. Yeah. So here's the rub down. Okay, this was the IE3 years, where they were really going against Netflix. And can you get the bleep button ready? Because a senior Microsoft executive said our job was to... Netflix so hard they would never come back to us.
Netscape.
Netflix.
No, but you know what? I remember when IE3 came out and Microsoft was giving it away, Netscape was charging. It was very clear that it was all over for Netscape. In fact, it wasn't much longer before Netscape did have to go
on. Well, I mean, they paid us to send out screenshots with IE, gaming screenshots with IE rather than Netscape.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea was to bombard everyone, kill Netscape completely. IE is free. ActiveX is great. It's a really good security solution. I tried to explain to them.
Oh my God!
Really,
it was
wasn't
a security nightmare. Are you kidding?
Oh no! Exactly.
Random code from the internet running on your machine with full privilege. No, that was a terrible idea.
Right now,
you've got to understand. Microsoft was running scared because they completely missed internet. And then they were trying to come back and use their position to dominate.
That's right.
And this was
the bad old days of Microsoft when they were bloodthirsty. Yeah. You know,
they were Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, absolutely.
Honestly, they're still a bit bloodthirsty, but you know,
you guys are making me feel like I've had my eyes closed to all this stuff, and it sounds pretty corrupt and. Wow, I just want to reassure anybody who listens to any of our shows that we do not engage in any of those practices. For years, I've refused even to talk to PR people. We've always tried to be objective about everything we talk about. This is so depressing.
You should start a video game show where you were doing that and see how the video game industry handles PR.
Really,
because if you think the tech industry is bad, they will freeze you out from copies of the game. They will. It is the absolute worst.
Well, and I always assumed that car magazines, for instance, probably were in the pockets. This is the problem. When you're covering an industry, you have to have a relationship. It's the old Beltway politics problem. Is you have to have a relationship with the people you're covering, and it pretty soon becomes difficult to be completely objective at all, because you just you're friends with these people, and eventually maybe you're getting paid by them or sleeping with them or they're taking you out to dinner or whatever. It gets pretty incestuous.
But I mean, this is the problem with Apple for so many years, in that there were the 12 disciples of Apple who were people who got AppleKit ahead of
It was four. The iPhone went to Walt Mossberg, Ed Begg at USA Today, David Pogue at the New York Times, and who else?
Four men.
Of course, men. Yeah. We wouldn't give it to women, but that's changed, by the way. Joanna Stern now gets plenty of
Lauren
love.
Good, yes.
Lauren Good, plenty of love from
myself.
From the big companies. You, that Florence Ion over at Gizmodo, I heard she just got a free HomePod. So
For testing people.
Temporary. And you're going to send it back.
It doesn't belong to me. You're going to send it back. I had to sign a contract.
That's a fine. In fact, that's appropriate.
When I say I get something in, I had to sign a contract. Yes. I have to have a story plan. You cannot just get this.
No, but that was always, in fact, I'm glad that you're covering Apple, because that was always my problem with Apple coverage. There are these people who are on the inside who gets, you know, basically groomed by Apple. Walt Mossberg
was groomed
by Steve Jobs, and as a result was very friendly to Apple. And Apple's very good at doing that. And I never was on the inside in this Apple crowd. You know, when you go to a Macworld Expo, I wasn't part of the party crowd.
I got so much hate for calling Walt Mossberg an Apple whore. that was just the amount. I mean, I literally got a death threat from that one.
Yeah.
Of course you did.
I got into a fight with him, too.
No, I have a lot of respect for Walt. I think he's a great guy. He probably knew he was being groomed, but he got access. And this is the problem. It's a tit for tat. Now he's got access. He's talking with Steve Jobs. He's sitting down with him. And this is, unfortunately, you're not going to see CEOs on our shows. You're not going to see people from companies on my shows anyway, because I don't want to do that. I won't do that.
But this is why I love this show. You don't get access. But, I mean, this is why I love this show. You actually allow people to speak honestly.
Yeah.
Whereas, for so much of this stuff is couched. I don't want to lose my access. Access journalism is a losing game. All you're giving them is the ability to put their particular opinion out there. And Gizmodo has done this better than many. Of course, I'm Reg, so, we argue. But, access journalism is just, it gives you nothing.
Yeah.
You're just basically repeating.
Well, and it's all happening all over again. In my opinion, on YouTube, and it's become very difficult to tell who's.
It's happening there. It's also happening on TikTok because I know like a lot of people want to dismiss TikTok as just another social media, but it is essentially a YouTube. A lot of people go there to get information,
right?
And they use it as a resource.
In some defense, your generation, most of the journalists of your generation, didn't come from J school. They weren't schooled in this this whole notion of separation of church and state and stuff. They literally don't know any better. They're just
which is hard for me because I did go to J school.
You did. I did.
I graduated from San Francisco State University's
very good
journalism
school.
Department.
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, and that's the problem. Most YouTubers, they're just some guy or gal who, started to turn on a camera, and so if products are proffered to them. Or free trips or any of that, they say yes. They don't know any different. So I don't blame them.
Yeah, but also, somebody actually brought this up last night because on TikTok, it was like, it's very hard being an influencer. And it's true because it is a lot of work. And I'm thinking about all the work I had to do to become a journalist, all the jobs I had to have to be able to like pay rent and go to school and get the internships. But there's privilege behind it. And sometimes like getting this stuff, having access to this stuff, if it gets you in front of people, it's hard. I get it. It's a balance.
Yeah.
Kind of bring this back around to the beginning of the show, something I think about a lot and something I would love to get y'all's like opinions on this as journalists. It really seems to me that in the last, really since the Bush administration and the Iraq war, we've seen a dilution in the power of journalism to create outrage and change with the public. There's a lot out there for like entertainment journalism. And I think tech journalism has done well because you're ultimately like buying a product based on that or keeping, up to date on culture. But I really can't figure out why journalism as an institution has so much less power than it had when, I remember an age where it was different. And I don't know if it's just the changing of America where shame doesn't have the same function that it used to. I don't know if it's a problem with the institution itself where there was so much horse race that, really holding people accountable is less of what you do. But like, why is journalism not able to solve the many problems that we have in America the way it used to.
And we so desperately need, right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons for it. Economic reasons, absolutely. Newspapers have failed all over the country. There is also the problem of this flooding the zone with BS. There are many people who know that if they can spread enough misinformation that you can't tell what's right or wrong, if you can undermine the trust people have in their journalism, if you tell them all it's fake news, then there's no one to tell the truth anymore. There's no one to speak truth to power. And then you can get away with whatever you want. And that's clearly happening.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt before you're finished, but there are people who don't trust. Listen, there's a lot of things I don't like about sometimes the New York Times, like the opinion column.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I'm hot or cold there.
It's a mixed bag. It definitely is.
It's a mixed bag, but like there are people who just don't trust that there's a paper of record anymore.
No. That people hate the New York Times. Record. People have been.
I mean, I genuinely think we're in the middle of information shock at the moment.
That's exactly right.
If you think 60 years ago, the amount of data that you got from outside sources was a couple of newspapers, a radio station, maybe a couple of TV stations. Right now, anyone can put a plausibly looking website on there, spread spam, and get it out. Journals of record are very, very hard to find. And I think, honestly, humans aren't quite designed to deal with that yet. So we naturally go for things which, you know, coddle our particular opinion.
That's right. That's right.
But this isn't the first time historically we've had that phenomenon. Like, if you look at the Samuel Adams, it wasn't a beer, it was a radical propagandist. Like,
right.
At the beginning of this country, you had the muckrakers. I mean, this is not the first time in American history you've had disinformation as a large force, even by like independent people that are deeply invested in telling people what they want to hear. I would point you towards the anti-abolition paper during slavery in this country.
Indeed.
Something has changed, though, where none of it seems to be having a real effect. Like, the things that we argue about are all kind of talked about in the same spheres by people that, generally speaking, hold the same opinions about things.
I agree. I mean, there's an interesting corollary in 1847 where, you know, the telegraph and newspapers had started to spread. The trains had allowed people to move. And in 1848, we lost three monarchies in Europe just in 3 days because information was spreading and people were getting out there. Now, the amount of disinformation out there, I've got to say, I'm seriously worried. You know, this is not good for a society. And we need to sort out how to. I mean, we had, when I was growing up, we had media education, which is looking at how the news is spread and how it's done. We need social media education. I mean, it's just, you need qualitative and, you know, analysis of what is coming on. And that's not coming.
Let me take a little break because we are running out of time. I hate to, because I love this conversation. And I have so many questions for you, especially you. I want to know what you're talking about there about pay to play. We're going to have a conversation over a
I'm over a happy pint. To talk.
Yeah. But we do need to take a break because we have sponsors. That's how we pay the bills. And this is a sponsor I'm proud to be representing, actually, userway.org. You may not know this, but every website, every single website is a public entity, which means in the United States, you are bound by the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA. Your website has to be accessible. That's not just a good idea, although it is a darn good idea. It's the law. Not easy. And in fact, if you have a website, you might be a little challenged by the idea of, well, how do I make my website comport with the hundreds, and there are literally hundreds, of WCAG guidelines. WCAG, that's the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. That's your job. That's what you got to do. But I got an easy way to do it. User Way. In a matter of seconds, User Way can do more than an entire team of developer can do in months. User Way, a simple line of JavaScript, can make your site accessible. In fact, start right now. Use their free scanning tool at userway.org/twit just to see what the issues are on your website, how compliant with the ADA your website is. Then take a look at what User Way can do for you. Not just for big enterprise sites with thousands of pages. And for those sites, they do have a great managed solution where their team can do it all for you. But even for little sites like ours, we recently added User Way to our website. In fact, if you go to twit.tv, you'll see in the lower right-hand corner that Vitruvian Man button. You just click on that, and you'll see what you can do to our website to make it accessible. We think that's great because we want everybody to be able to use our website. User Way powers accessibility for over a million websites, Coca-Cola, Disney, eBay, FedEx, Twit. And now they're making their best-in-class enterprise-level accessibility tools available to small and medium businesses. And let me tell you, it was very affordable. It costs less than the web font we pay for to put on our page so you can see a nice font. It's that affordable. And it scales with you. If it can handle Coca-Cola and Disney, it can handle any site, right? User Way is the leading accessibility solution on the market today with 61% market share. It's the biggest in the world. As an example, the Motley Fool, big, you know, investment advisor site, they had 1,911 pages on their website, 20 million page views a month. They had designed for accessibility. They knew that was part of the deal, but their development team was spending a lot of time keeping it up to current standards. Those standards have really been changing a lot. And of course, every time you add a page, you have to make sure it's compliant. So they used User Way as an extra layer of accessibility to make sure the browsing experience is accessible to everyone. It uses AI, machine learning, computer vision. For instance, you know you have to have alt tags on all the images, right? The computer vision looks at an image and says what it is and writes the description for you. You can add to that if you want. In fact, with User Way, you'll get a detailed report of all the things fixed on your website so you know what was changed and you know what you can do if you want to enhance it. It remediates complex nav menus, ensures that all pop-ups are accessible, fixes vague link violations, fixes broken links, even makes sure your website makes use of accessible colors. Still true to your brand, but accessible. And that's what it's all about. There are 60 million people with disabilities. You don't want to leave them out. And here's the good news. User Way is easy to use. A single line of JavaScript. They have plugins for WordPress, Shopify, Wix, Sitecore, SharePoint. Every site, User Way can help your business meet its compliance goals and improve the experience for your users. The Voices series, Susan Bennett, has this to say about User Way.
Hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. You won't hear me say something like this too often. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're looking for. But every day, that's what the internet is like for millions of people with disabilities. User Way fixes all of that with just one line of code.
I love the idea, and I think you will too. User Way can make any website fully accessible and ADA compliant for a lot less than you think. With User Way, everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly, customize it to fit your needs. It's how it should be, right? Just showcase your brand's commitment to the millions of people with disabilities. Go to userway.org/twit. You right now get 30% off User Way's AI-powered accessibility solution. User Way, making the internet accessible for everyone. This is one I can really get behind. userway.org/twit. Thank you, User Way. userway.org/twit. All right, we're talking about... before we get to the next subject, I should mention we have a little movie we made about the week that was on Twit.
How often in a day do each of you use your smart speaker?
Every day.
It's the most expensive clock.
Oh, I use it. I get in the bathroom, I play music, or I do my vocal warm-ups. I say...
Wait. No, we got to hear you do vocal warm-ups. I need to hear this.
Ready?
We are starting with the hum.
Mommy made me match my M&M's.
Previously on Twit. It is time to take a look at the Steam Deck from Valve. I got this and wanted to give it a real try to see if this could serve as my gaming PC. I've only got my Mac, and I wanted to see if this would work as that replacement.
Security now.
Last Tuesday, Mozilla's headline read, "Firefox rolls out total cookie protection by default to all users worldwide."
Woo-hoo!
I know. What's most shocking is that, to me, is that it took us this long to get here.
Mac Break Weekly.
Those of us who have been using Macs since 1984 are very familiar with Claris, the cow dog.
Claris, dog cow, please.
Dog cow. Pardon me. Oh, God. Oh, Claris is back, baby, in the new macOS Ventura printer dialogue.
I think it's kind of like someone got a facelift and you're like, ooh, you shouldn't have done that. You know, like it was, you know, like it looks smoother, but it's like, you know, you lost the character of who you are.
Ooh,
you
shouldn't have done that.
Technology isn't always pretty, but we are.
maybe you shouldn't have done that. It was a fun week on Twit. By the way, Club Twit members know that because Club Twit is where you go to have a good time. Ad-free versions of all of our shows, the fabulous Club Twit Discord, where you can not only chat about shows, but see shows that we don't put out. Things like our Untitled Linux show, The Giz Fizz, Stacey's Book Club, our Sci-Fi Book Club. Ooh, I got to see what book are we going to read next? I can't wait. I'm so excited. Plus events like members fireside chat coming up. Alex Lindsay and Ask Me Anything, July 14th. It's just great fun, and the Twit Plus feed makes it even better. And all of that, $7 a month. A couple of cups of coffee and you're in. Please, it helps us. It helps us. It's
that
also
this thing is really weird.
The home of animated GIFs. It helps us launch new shows. We're going to launch a new show with one of our favorite hosts soon. That will be great. And because new shows don't have advertisers, it's out of pocket. But with the help of Club Twit, we can do a lot more. So please go to twit.tv/clubtwit and join the fun. I don't see where I. Maybe it's under the book. Book club. I want to see what they had a poll. Oh, looks like it's going to be Clara in the Sun. It was close, though. That was a close vote. Have you read that? Do you know
no,
it?
No, I haven't read any of those.
It's the guy who did Remains of the Day, which was one of my favorite books. I really loved that. Ishigawa, I think is his name. And
sorry, Leo, I only read Shigura. Books about talking beer cans. And
that's
space.
Right. That's... Stick with the talking beer cans. This is probably, this is sci-fi, though. Our book club is sci-fi, Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. That's right.
Oh, wow. Oh, they're one of my favorite
AI.
Authors. Yeah.
Yes. And it's about how artificial intelligence might play a role in our futures, a poignant meditation on love and loneliness. And we picked last time it was Neal Stephenson's Termination Shotgun. It was so long that Ant gave up. So this time we got a little bit shorter book. It's only 320 pages. Wait a minute. I was promised a short book.
I love Neal Stephenson so much. But
I do too.
He just... A, he can't nail endings.
No.
And B, he just goes too far.
This is the Termination Shock is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
But I love his research. I love, like, I learned stuff from him. I learned about meth alligators. I learned about the line of actual control between China and India. Up in the Himalayas, I learned about using sulfur dioxide to end climate change. I mean, there's a character in there, a cowboy, who's built a giant six-shooter that's shooting sulfur dioxide, sulfur into the sky, into the stratosphere to increase the Earth's albedo so climate change is ending.
I'm still waiting.
I have a lot of...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm still waiting for his sword-fighting game because he was...
He has a cryptocurrency now.
Well, I mean, I saw him in Black Hat a couple of years ago, and it's like, I'm working on a proper physical sword fighting game.
Wow.
And that hasn't happened. And cryptocurrency I've read about, Yeah, I mean, he's a great author in so many ways. He makes lousy endings to his books.
Yeah, but who cares? I don't care how it ends.
Hey, come on. Arthur C. Clarke screwed up so many times.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, he actually thought the rotary dial telephone was going to work.
Yeah. I have to. I just want to push back on that a little bit. I have come to appreciate his endings. They are unconventional. Like I think his ending for Snow Crash is one of the greatest endings of any novel ever.
It's certainly I don't remember the ending, but the beginning, it's the best beginning of any novel.
Oh, it's wonderful. But YT, the final line of it is like, home, take me home sounds good. You know, and she's got this huge adventure and she's reunited with her mom. Yeah. Or Diamond Age, like where Nell, Princess Nell, is under the ocean and she kisses the drummers and Miranda, and then she's the new queen of this new republic that came. That was awesome. That took me a while to like accept. But I think Termination Shock, it's the same way. I mean, I don't want to spoil it because it's a newer book, but it's like you have this character that's like, what do we do now? It was so in her character that I kind of liked that. So, yeah. I don't know.
You see, I mean, I thought Snow Crash was, it kind of obviated all the badass stuff that she'd done. And I kind of get it that, you know, she went home and the rest of it. Diamond Age, yeah, very good. But
Seven Eves.
I don't know.
People don't Seven like Eves. The ending of that. I loved it. I didn't mind. But see, part of the problem is you want more.
Oh, of course. He's a great writer.
You don't want it to end. So that's part of the problem, right?
No, I'm the same with Ursula Guin and the rest of it. I want more.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was that kind of feeling that Stevenson couldn't do endings well.
I don't have a problem with his endings. I think his problem is his best books were earlier in his career where he was not successful enough that he could not tell his editor, we're going to do it my way. And because of that, all of his books have become books by the pound, which is Seven Eves is so too long. And the Baroque Cycle is way, way, way too long.
Yes.
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you totally. I'm not going to get up, but I have the first editions of the Baroque Cycle down in that bookcase, and he's got Dickens syndrome. Editor is going to say to him, "Look, just cut this down and you know, just get it together."
Dickens got paid Baroque by the word, so Dickens had a good excuse for it.
Well, no, exactly. But, you know, I mean, I literally camped out outside a bookshop in London just to get the first editions of the Baroque Cycle, and I was so disappointed.
Yeah, I had high hopes that, too, and it was a but you know what? It's one of, like a lot of his books, the journey is, you have to really appreciate the journey. So the Baroque Cycle, if you just don't, you don't feel like you're trying to get to the end or there's trying to be a story or anything. You're just there. It's just happening all around you.
Oh, he screwed it in the second book. You know, the whole recovering from syphilis thing was, spoilers.
It's hard when you're recovering from syphilis. It's hard to make that an exciting part of any novel, I think. But who knows?
The show is now This Week in Neal Stephenson.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Hey, what do you think of the Nothing phone, Florence Ion? This is the phone announced.
I think
today.
Nothing about it. It doesn't exist. It's nothing.
Oh.
Bravo.
Well, Marques Brownlee has one.
Okay. I mean, Marques Brownlee has a lot of things
that no one else has, including.
I do plan on going full force. I feel like this is a good time for me to bring up that I'll be on All About Android this coming week.
Are you going to show it off on All About Android?
No, I don't have the phone, but I have a lot of opinions.
Yes. This for some reason, they put lights on the back, even though who doesn't put a case
LEDs.
On their phone, right? Mm-hmm. 900 LEDs? Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of cool. I guess I won't put a... so this Nothing phone, Carl Pei created Nothing out of nothing. No, not out of nothing. Didn't he buy Andy Rubin's Essential
Let's also not forget what Andy Rubin, disgraced Andy Rubin.
Yes, the disgraced Andy Rubin. And by the way, the Essential phone was a disgrace as well because I bought it and it never did anything. Never came out with any of those modules.
I remember when you let us play with it for All About Android, and I remember just like,
what's the
point? I want to get excited about these phone releases, but it really is like a Samsung Google world in the Android realm, and a lot of what I'm seeing with the marketing around the Nothing phone reminds me, it just feels like deja vu, because I was there when OnePlus originally announced,
and he was the founder of OnePlus. Which has now been sucked back into the body cavity of Oppo.
Oppo, parent company BBK, but at the same time, OnePlus is in carriers here in the United States, and the Nothing phone will not be. And
in fact, they're not going to sell it here at all, are they?
They're not going to sell it here at all. No, I mean you could technically buy it, I'm sure, and use it in the
United States. Say it's not fully supported in North America, which means you might you might be unhappy.
Which they have to say.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. So
I'm not impressed with it. It just it's good luck taking on the Apple Android duopoly. I mean, best of luck, but it just
Do we need another phone? I mean, we've got some good choices. We've got Google. We've got Samsung. We've got Apple. Do we need...
I mean, we all want competition in the space. We just talked about, like, at the beginning of the show, privacy policy and why that's important. And, you know, like, I think competition would be good. I just don't know how this space expands to really have competition at this point.
Resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which they don't have, which is why a lot of what we see that's new is just a reprised Android phone with a different skin on top of it. Even if it is like, this is our version of Android. It's like, well, it's still built on top of Google's Android and it still has Google Play services, which means it's another Android phone.
Yeah. Obviously as tech reporters, we want excitement and whizzy new things. Do people care? I mean, frankly, if you're looking at Android, all they care about is prices.
No,
right?
People care hugely.
Oh.
And I've got to say, one of the things that really pissed me off about the move from Nexus to Pixel was they went from a stripped down operating system to we're going to tart this up like a 1998 MySpace page. You know, they're going to stick all this
stuff
up there.
Ian, the Pixel is a much better device than the Nexuses were in terms of what it can actually do.
The cameras are much
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Nexus was a bog-standard phone.
It was a developer phone.
At the end of the day, what do you want from a phone? Do you want something that makes calls and allows you to access the internet? Or do you want all the hoopy features that are out there? I'm sorry, I just want a phone which is secure and which does the basic job. And I understand that's not entirely a popular view. But at the same time, you know, Nexus was a great developer platform. Pixel, once they started tarting it up, I have no choice.
Because it's about the assistant. It's not about Android. About the assistant.
Have you seen
the
ecosystem? The hot new phone in For All Mankind?
Oh,
God.
So this is Apple TV's...
Burn it with fire.
This is Apple TV's revisionist show where the Soviets won the space race. They got to the moon first. It's actually kind of fun for that reason. I think it's in its third season now. And at one point... So it takes place in that era, in the 60s and 70s. And at one point, they're making a video call. And it's actually kind of clever. They took a Newton message pad, put a fake camera, which it never had, on top of it. Although that's what it would have looked like if they'd made it. But it's embodied in there is that there's actually an iPhone inside so that it can actually make a video call. Isn't that hysterical?
Right.
I like
it's
that.
It's like Apple halfway products, between
Apple
Newton.
Shows.
Yeah. What a surprise. It's half Newton, half iPhone 12 Pro
half
Max.
Palm handspring. Expansion slot.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss handsprings so much. You know, I mean, I loved my Palm 3X because you could plug it into a keyboard, and B, you had AA batteries that you could put into the back of it. and it was great as a journalist.
Yeah, but have you gone back and actually tried to use one? Because I made the mistake of, okay, so just full disclosure, if you ever read my physical handwriting, it is destroyed because of palm graffiti, because I write in palm graffiti.
You write
to this
palm
day.
Graffiti. Wow.
I just use it for so many years when I was coming of age that it is, that's how I write my T's, that's how I write my E's, all of it. So I was very curious to go back and retry this because, you know, when I was in college, like that palm tungsten C, I took all my notes on it. It was absolutely amazing. Amazing. Don't do this. Leave those memories undisturbed. Those happy memories.
That's
this does
wonderful.
Not hold up, y'all.
She writes in graffiti. That's
I
so
mean, seriously,
cool.
I mean, I would sit, I was doing a lot of work with Nokia and Ericsson in Scandinavia. So I was sitting on a plane writing using my keyboard with the Palm 3X plugged in. And everyone was just like, what the hell is that? This is like, no, this is the way, this is the future. Hardware keyboards, they're not the way of the future. But
if you want to see Brianna's handwriting, here is the Palm Pilot graffiti reference
that's what
card.
That's looks like. Yep.
So
that's how they teach you to do shorthand in J-School.
It's kind of like, the K is just that loopy thing because they realized that computer handwriting recognition, which was first attempted in 1993 by the Newton, famously a famous fail, wasn't going to work. So when they created the Palm, they said, you know, we should really have a modified, less ambiguous English alphabet that the computer can read. So you see the T is just that left bend. But you actually, if you use graffiti, you can get very fast at it. It was actually quite well designed.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. The four was a little weird, but
there is a certain Eat Up Martin element to this, but it was good. They added keyboards to it, but technology overcame it.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of overcoming, I think it's time to go to dinner. I want to thank all three of you. You are marvelous. Especially Florence and Brianna, who showed up on short notice so that we could have the conversation we did on the show. And I really appreciate your input. You guys are wonderful. Florence Ion, longtime stalwart at All About Android, now at Gizmodo. You do show up on AAA all the time. In fact, you said you're going to be on this week to talk about the nothing. Mm-hmm. She'll be talking about nothing.
Once a month, and this week is my
nothing month.
Time.
So glad to have you, Florence. Thank you very much. And I'm your baby didn't wake up, so I guess we're okay.
Oh no, she was whistling earlier.
Oh,
I
cute.
Actually apologize to the IRC that. Chat if they can hear her whistling.
No,
cute. Yeah,
well, I'm sorry she didn't toddle in and sit in your lap like the BBC, but next time. We could look forward to that. Brianna, you are marvelous. Please apologize to Frank once again for the kerfuffle I caused.
You didn't cause it. I caused it.
Oh, whatever. So. You know, we caused it together. Let's put it that way.
We got it done.
we made Brianna go out and get a hard wire for her. And you know what? It worked. You sounded great. RebellionPack.com. What is Rebellion Pack?
Rebellion Pack, if you are interested in doing something about basically the state of this country,
Rebellion Pack,
we use large data to basically target voters that other people don't. Campaigns are set up to target what we call triple primes, people that vote in, national elections, local elections, and state elections. We figure those people are going to be contacted. This is the reason why if you vote, you get people coming to canvass you five times, because that data is so easily available. We actually do analysis to figure out the people who are registered to vote but aren't really that activated.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And we create ads that are based on issues that will make a very measurable difference in their life. Things like unionization, minimum wage. I'm sure this time around we will do a ton of ads on choice. So one of the things I learned when I ran for Congress is that Democratic operatives are not very good on technology. They suck, and our tools are based in the 90s. So that's why we started the pack. There's a huge need for people that are technologically literate to kind of do the data segmentation.
And you have something that more tech journals should have, an ethics page.
Yes, we do.
If you want to read more about the ethics of a rebellion pact. Do I have to donate through Act Blue? Can I give it to you directly? Just give you a check?
Yes, you can.
I'll mail you a check. It's kind of old-fashioned, but that way you get it all.
I'm aware of Act Blue's problems. I've had discussions with them about that. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've used Act Blue, and that was how I donated in the last few cycles. But I feel like they take a big cut, and not sure I really like the way the dark patterns they use on their site and things like that. So
they're a Massachusetts company, and I'm always thankful for the help they've given us over the years.
Yes.
But they have some issues they need.
They make it easy. Down. That's the good news.
They do.
Yeah.
Their API is good. It's secure, but good. There are other problems.
All right. Well, then I'll give to you through ActBlue. Why not? It makes it ease of access is a big part of this. I'm sure. RebellionPack.com. Thanks for the work you're doing. We really appreciate it, Brianna. Ian, someday you're going to come up here. You and I will have a Scotch egg and a pint of Guinness's Best, and we'll talk
Scotch
about the good
egg,
old
sausage
days.
Sausage roll, we're all there.
Don't leave our fine country. Stay here and help us make it better. How about that?
Honestly, I mean, I'm going for citizenship, but at the same time,
I know.
It's kind of like, although, let's face it, Boris's Britain isn't great.
No, I think what we should do is we should all move to Vancouver, Canada. Beautiful area.
And are you kidding? No, we all need to move to San Sebastian.
Oh.
Spain.
All right.
Yeah. It is marvelous.
That Marcos guy is long gone. We don't have to worry about the fascists anymore, right? It's okay.
But I mean, honestly, no, I'm staying in the U.S.
Yes.
Because we need to sort this stuff out.
We've got
to
sort it out. Yeah.
And I'm not going to run away.
No. Good.
We're going to sort this stuff out.
Yes. And we need the British to help us.
There's a phrase which hasn't been heard for 300 years. Yes.
You'll be back. Wait and see. Just remember you belong to me.
As long as you spell anonym correctly, then, you know, I'm
spell it? I can't
that.
Even say it. All right. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, about 2 Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You can watch us do it live. Get all the swear words unbowdlerized at live.twit.tv. After the fact,
am I supposed to say you wanker at this point?
You didn't say wanker. You didn't say any cod swallop. You didn't say any of those funny, funny British words that you people say. Try not to say anything bad. If you want an on-demand version, all the shows are available at twit.tv. Also on YouTube, there's video, and each show has its own dedicated channel. So just search for This Week in Tech. And then, of course, you can subscribe, audio or video, available in your favorite podcatcher. We like to call it the first podcast of the week and your last word in tech, This Week in Tech. Now in its 18th year, making people hopping mad. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bloody hell.